sometimes.
Pinpointed responses from the officials without the background and the context.
Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Two, the restatement of corresponding of figures. Three, irregular expenditure condoned. Chair, let me start with the irregular expenditure condoned. At page 146 of the annual report, paragraph 14 to 16. The AG could not satisfy himself as to the accuracy and existence of irregular expenditure condoned amounting to 34 million. This relates to finance lease agreements for equipment exceeding 36 months, which in terms of practice of note 5 of 2006 and 7 is not condoned. The committee understands that these were condoned by National Treasury, but why were these lease agreements not available to the Auditor General? And the one last question to that, what equipment was leased by the department, and how exactly did the department not comply with the Treasury regulation number 13.2.5, as pointed out in the financial notes 28.3 on page 194.
Thank you. Yeah, please ask one question. As it is now, I can't even remember your question.
So the kind of the way the on the Auditor General's report, you are bound to make two questions so that they are related. It's not like you go as they respond, they'll be able then to know what matters. First question, Chair. Why were not the lease agreements not available to the AG?
In terms of the finance leases condoned is similar to the audit qualification relating to finance leases and the disclosure note dealing with finance leases. So the same reason why we could not provide substantive documentation for the expenditure condoned would obviously apply to the note on finance leases. So in terms of why is it that those documents were not available, the lease disclosure note for the financial statements were prepared based on a database populated at National Office for all the leases across the country. Due to the nature of the business, the lease agreements are all available at the different offices because the offices would sign those lease agreements and they need to refer to those lease agreements when they do the payments on a monthly basis. So the document would be at a regional or office level, whereas the database used for the calculation of the leases would be done on a national basis. It's only when the auditors queried specific contracts that we realized that we do not have all those contracts available at a national office level.
So you would say it's a frivolous qualification?
No, Chair. I do agree that the necessary controls in terms of those documents.
So it's not a simple case of they were not at head office, they were at regional level, so you were qualified because of that.
Okay.
Let's get to the actual reason, because what you have said so far creates an impression that the lease agreements were at regional offices. When the Auditor General wanted them at national, they were not there.
We were qualified, I think, correctly. Let us start there. We chose and we took a strategy to decentralize. And I think in our process of decentralizing, we may have lost day-to-day direct management and oversight over those contracts. And as a result, they were not in our offices at National Office at the time when the audit was done, and what we are now doing is to try and consolidate and have all of that data in our environment. But I think the long and the short of it is that at that time, they were not in our offices at head office. We had taken a strategy, and with hindsight, maybe that strategy may have had a good intention, but we probably took too much of the decentralization and did not balance it adequately with governance so that we apply day-to-day oversight.
So the issue is governance?
Yes, Chair.
Chair, let me thank the response. I just want to understand, if the lease were not centralized, don't you have people who are doing specifically that in those regional offices? Maybe they should wait for the head office to come down to them, or should they be reporting on work that is done?
Thank you. In terms of the one of the underlying root causes as well that we've identified for these symptoms that we see in the audit report, I think the challenge that we face with is that we do have people in the offices. Unfortunately, we don't have the right skill in the offices, the right caliber of people with the right skill and training. So yes, there are people in the offices. However, in terms of supply chain management, we do not have adequate resources at a regional as well as at an office level to maintain these contracts, which is why a decision has then been taken after the audit.
What has been the impact of those shortfalls that you're talking to on this management?
The impact, Chairperson, would be the audit qualification that we've received on it. And I think some of the other audit qualifications would boil down to exactly the same problem.
So what was the audit qualification? Was it that the lease agreements were not at head office, or that they are not there, or they were not at head office simply because the regional office could not provide them anyway?
Chief, in terms of the preparations of financial statements, if I put a note in the financial statements, in this case the lease's disclosure note, then I should have all the documents supporting that number. In this case, it was not available at national office. So there's no excuse for that from a CFO perspective.
Chef, if maybe we can try to check why was it so difficult for you to get those lease agreements? What is the problem? Because we are centralizing, but what is the difficulties of your office to get those lease agreements?
Can I do this, comrade? Because I think we're not being very direct, but I get what she's saying. They're decentralized, but there's no proper management. So when the time comes for documents to be made available, they're not there. It is a governance issue.
See, the answer is very easy. Why was it so difficult to obtain these leases from those decentralized regional offices? We are not getting that answer. Why was it to get a lease? You have an office all over, you have a telephone, you have a fax, you have an email, you have everything. Why was it so difficult to obtain the lease to be available for audit purposes? On that one. For me, it's a very valid answer. We are dealing with professionals here. Why was it difficult? Just answer this specific question. Why was it difficult to phone protesting where I come from, regional office in protesting, to get the lease agreement to be available for audit purposes?
Yeah. I said from the beginning, let's make it easy. Let's just give it as it is. This is the problem that we're having. Then we'll move on. Otherwise, it's one question. I'm sure we've now taken more than 10 minutes on it. That's it. You see, our major problem, it's 1, 2, 3. We'll accept that is the objective situation. Then we'll say, what are you doing? What have you done to correct that situation?
Thank you, Chief. The The recourse, the documentation should be available for the auditors at the time that they requested to audit the financial statements, and it was not available. We did try and get documents. Unfortunately, it's expected of us, it's a management responsibility to make sure that 100% of those documents are available. So if the auditors pull another sample, I will have to phone again to get some of those documents. So definitely, controls not in place, governance structure not in place in terms of the decentralized environment.
Okay.
Okay. That's the past now. Going forward, is this next year going to be another qualification? As we sit here now, have you been able to manage this problem effectively, or are we going to see a repeat version again next year?
So I can confidently say that you will not see this qualification in the next audit report, which is May, July this year. We have established a task team who is about 70% finalized with the cleanup on leases as a whole countrywide. We have also issued directives in terms of specific control measures that will be in place. In other words, any office cannot sign any of these lease agreements going forward. In terms of the cleanup, we have obtained about 60% of the outstanding supporting documentation. The balance of it is quite easy, as it relates to about 900 leases, of which 600 relates to one service provider on the state contract, and we're in negotiations with them in order to provide that. So in terms of the completeness of the information, that will definitely not be a challenge. That then will then obviously form the basis of our database and our calculations for the leases disclosure note, which was the other qualification on the audit report.
Elephants here. We're not going to forget this. You've now made a commitment that this will not be repeated in the next audit report. We will look for that, and we will hold you to account for that.
Before
you continue. Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. Just following on that answer, I think we'd just like to know, is the department at head office aware of all the leases that have been signed by regional officers and anybody else in your employ? And are there specific mandates given to people at lower level to enter into lease agreements? And if so, what are those mandates?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we are aware of all the leases. We verify the lease information that we get from the offices, and the team went to the physical offices themselves with the payments that we make on our financial system to make sure that we do know of all those leases. In terms of who's allowed to sign these contracts, it would only be the National Office Bid Adjudication Committee, as well as on a regional level, the Regional Control Committee that's been established. Same time, copies go through to the Supply Chain Management Unit at National Office to keep the database up to date. Thank you.
Just a minute. Push.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think they understand that the failure to manage this lease agreement has gotten financial implications. Therefore, your answer should also deal with what are you going to do with the 63 million, which is therefore missing because of the very same failure for you to manage this thing. You cannot just tell us that you are going to do something but not talk to the exact amount that is concerned for all of us sitting here. 63 million.
All right. Tell me just a minute. Let me go back to Chulan, otherwise we might be intruding on a territory.
You're already just playing at my territory. The second question, what equipment was leased by the department, and how exactly did the department could not comply with treasury regulations as pointed out in the financial note 28.3.
Thank you, Chairperson. Note 28.3 financial statement deals with the details of irregular expenditure condoned during the year under review. And irregular expenditure come down in terms of the RT3, the blanket approval given by the National Treasury, relates to 34.6 million rand and not 63 million. So what that condemnation is about, the RT3 contract, which is a transversal contract, was entered into by the former department or a state tender board. When they moved to accrual accounting, and obviously the concurrent emphasis on leases and finance leases and operating leases, it then became evident that these leases, although entered into as an operating lease or under the impression it's an operating lease at that point in time, and it gets renewed every 3 years, that those terms of the agreement actually constitute finance leases, and we fully agreed to that. It's on that basis that the Treasury then condoned those expenditure and condoned it on an annual basis for all departments partaking in that contract. So it's a technical requirement in these agreements. In other words, there's three criteria in terms of finance leases which relate to the period that you repay it, the ownership, as well as the value in terms of your repayment. In terms of those criteria, these agreements comply to finance leases, and therefore the blanket, I'd like to call it the blanket condonation by National Treasury. What the audit paragraph then goes further to state is that that practice note, which condones these expenditure, also determines that if these contracts go for a period beyond 3 years, you need to get prior approval from the Treasury for that additional period. We have identified that we've got contracts that's running for longer than 3 years, and obviously then in terms of the practice note, we were supposed to approach Treasury prior to the period after the 3 years, or prior to the 5 year or to the extension after 3 years, which in this case, because of the lack of management, the lack of documentation, was not the case.
I just want to get the clarity. There's 36 instead of 63. 34. The Treasury condoned the 34, not the 63. Okay. Chair, we now come to the irregular expenditure as an emphasis of the matter. In paragraph 22 on page 147 of the annual financial report, an amount of 69 million was incurred as a result of proper tender procedures not being followed. Can I turn your attention to note 28.2 on page 194, where details of irregular expenditure are tabled, as well as the disciplinary steps taken? My first question. The procurement of security services happened in 2001 and 2 financial year. When did the official responsible resign from the department?
Just like to get to the detailed document. Unfortunately, I don't have the resignation date of the individual here, but maybe one of my colleagues can assist me. It's Lucas Malauzi from our security. That must have been about 3 years ago.
We would want to check as a committee after his resignation. Is there any way that he's paying back the money that missing during his tenure in the office?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. I think this specific case, in terms of the investigations that were conducted by the CFO's office and the subsequent condonation request to the National Treasury, I think it's worth mentioning that this expenditure has been condoned by National Treasury. So in other words, in our motivation request to the Treasury explaining the circumstances behind these urgent security services and why specific procedures were not followed, the National Treasury then condoned this expenditure. Therefore, there's no recovery involved in this. It's a matter of procurement prescripts that were deviated from, which is now being condoned, and we have received value for the services rendered at that point by the security company involved.
I don't know, maybe members will try to assist me here, because you asked for a condonement of 69 million and Treasury then condoned it, and you took disciplinary measures as a result, and officials then resigned. But I don't know if anyone will just do anything and just condone it, and then there's no plan for recovery, because these are huge amounts. These are huge amounts. Chairperson, I don't know if members could assist me to get an understanding.
She wants to respond, maybe to give her that light.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology, I think I misunderstood your question. Because I only responded to the first line in that note 28.3, which relates to the security one. If I can maybe go on to some of the other cases and maybe give you what the latest is in relation to that. I think in terms of the
I think part of the challenge is that you got condemnation, but the official resigned. As a consequence, it's not the same thing.
See, the official resigned even before we requested the condonation from National Treasury. So the official resigned about 3 years ago, and the condonation request only went to Treasury during the last financial year.
All right. Okay. No. She wanted to clarify something, so let me allow her.
Thank you, Chief.
Come in with,
I think if members can refer to note 28.2 on page 194, I can quickly just give you the latest in terms of those cases there that make up the 60 million. The second case there, the 2.5 million, relate to IT procurement that we procured via a CETA transversal contract without the knowledge that the contract has actually terminated. In this case, we say...
How do you not know that the contract is terminated?
So the explanation that we could obtain as part of the investigation is that CETA has not informed the department that contract has been terminated, and therefore the department continues to make use of that service provider, however the contract already expired. That was the only explanation we could get, Chair, and that's been confirmed with CETA. However, obviously, they're not prepared to put that in writing. I think importantly to note here, if you look at the CETA website, those contracts are listed there, and at that point in time, that contract that was expired was not removed from that website. But more critical, Chair, is that the fact that in this case, no loss was suffered. We did get value for the 2.5 million. And therefore, we say there's no amount recoverable here. And therefore, there's no request as well for condonation. Thank you, Chair.
I hear that it was a result of the something not going well between them and CETA. But why is it still in the books of 2008 and 2009, even if it's a matter of 2001, 2002, 2003? But it's still, I mean, if the AG will be able to pick it up then, but we can't say then it's a matter, it's a long ago matter, then just respect. But is it still appearing here?
Thank you. So I can then maybe refer members to note 28.4 on the same page. we listed details of irregular expenditure not recoverable, not condoned, and that is what I have explained. In other words, this case is disposed of. It's not recoverable because value were received for money, and we're not going to request condonation because there's no grounds for requesting condonation on this matter. So if you look at note 28.4, it will not appear in the next year's financial statements because it's disposed of. Chief, I then maybe can continue with the other items on that form part of note 28.2 with your permission. Thank you. Then in terms of the 257,000 that's listed there, in that case, competitive bids were not invited. The relevant official was dismissed following a disciplinary hearing. And looking at the details around that matter, the view is that that we would not request for any condonation because the official was disciplined in terms of not following procedures. So I cannot make out a case for condonation on grounds that do not exist. I think the disciplinary action was taken and will obviously then be reported as not recoverable, not condoned in the next year's financial statements. In other words, note 28.4. So insofar as we concern that matter is then also finalized. In terms of the 5.5 million, which is the fourth entry there on note 28.2, that relates to about 41 cases where quotations and bids were not obtained for our Justice College. Now, the Justice College, as you might be aware of, provides training for our judiciary, for our magistrates, for our departments, some other departments as well. And this expenditure relates to the booking of conference facilities or conference venues to provide these trainings. The cases are still under investigation, most of it gathering all the information, but the way forward for that would be is that portions of that can be condoned by the department's bid adjudication committee, the DBAC, and in those that fall outside the authority of the DBAC will be referred to the Director General for condemnation, obviously based on the specific reasons for that. What I would like to add to that is that at that point in time, we did not have a service provider in terms of making these arrangements for training venues, etc., whereas that has been addressed 2 years ago. If I can then proceed,
Chair. Just give me the last two.
Thank you. Then, in terms of the 17 million that's listed there, it's something that was also part of the previous audit report, where our delegations in terms of supply chain was not up to date in terms of the Treasury guidelines. That matter has also been condoned, and it's included that 17 million in terms of a condonation that's mentioned just in note 28.3, the 74 million there. So in other words, for that specific audit finding where the AG said our delegations weren't up to date in terms of the Treasury rules, we had to go back and quantify all those expenditure that related to that period, which is 2003 to 2006, and we had to request for condonation of that. So the 17 million is then part of the amount that was condoned by the previous Director General. In terms of the 34 million, that is the finance leases, that is the blanket condonation by the National Treasury,
I think we've
as we referred to.
Yeah, I think we've gone over the 34 million. Right. Let me check with Chilana first.
Chair, it seems as if all the notes that we have identified as a committee and would want explanations. Treasury has just condoned, and I don't know, maybe it's a norm that when things are not properly handled properly, when given explanation, then we'll then go to the Treasury to ask for the condonement, because really I don't think we are setting a good example. Hence, Chair, there's one thing that I just want to find out from the department. Again, there's detail in page 194.
Yeah.
I'm not yet done.
Can we? I'll definitely come back to you, comrade. I wanted to check with her.
Yeah, I'm not yet done because, you know, she answered all the condonement by treasure. I haven't yet asked your question. But while in the process she was answering, there's something that has been left. I think I must get the clarity on that one. I wanted to get the clarity. She spoke about the Justice College, that there was 5.5 which incurred relating to the venues. And there's also 9.48 million irrecoverable expenditure. Again, it appears to refer to the Justice College, more specifically on the consultancy services of on transformation and official business needs. But when you see again this site, if you can get a sense on, you condone everything, it dismiss, and that's all. No recovery. That's the word that we have as a community, because there are so many condonements in here, and people are being dismissed, but we can't recover. This is a state, the taxpayer's money. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I think in terms of note 28.2, the only condemnations we got from the Treasury was in relation to the security services, which is the 5 to 6,000. In terms of the other condemnations, where I have mentioned those were condoned by the Director General. And then for the other cases that I've mentioned, there was no condemnation. But because we have received value for money, it's a matter of a rule not being followed and an official being dismissed as a result of disciplinary process. There are no recoveries involved. In other words, should we find that we have not received value for money and someone can be held liable in law, then we will recover from
fearful. Are there no risks when rules are not being followed? What is the value of having rules if rules are not followed, and because we have value for money, then that's it. I mean, is it not encouraging that people can deviate from the rules as long as they give value for money? Are there no associated risks in terms of that kind of practice?
Let me admit there would be associated risks. Again, because the problem will then manifest itself in broadening itself down to the overall organization. So, yes, indeed, there will be that risk. In terms of the normal disciplinary processes, though, where we have not incurred direct financial loss, as it were, because in these cases, we are not talking about loss, we are talking about irregular. And there is where we are saying, under those circumstances, we have not recovered. But in areas where, and there is information here that we have with us, in areas where we've suffered a direct loss, we have proceeded against certain officials, and we've got evidence for that. Thanks.
Because I think the concern here was that as long as there has been deviation from the rules, there should be consequences for those officials, irrespective of whether there was value for money or not. The associated risk I'm talking about is that I can have my cousin's company that is very competent. You give them the contract. Yes, they will do a good job, but it was not a competitive bid. So people can decide who gets the contract. And that person will still do a good job, but it is not done in a competitive and fair manner. So people that are close to me might benefit. They might be good and competent. It still does not condone the fact that I would have corruptly given the services to people that are close to me. That, I think, for us, that is the greatest worry and risk, that when you have a regular expenditure, it might be talking to that, because there should be a reason why I decide to bend the rules. And what is that reason? It's not to give somebody I know. So I think the disquieting side is, let's not emphasize value for money, because it's almost as if because we've got value for money, it's fine. And so people can be encouraged to go against the rules. I think that's the concern from the side. Let me just check with you. I'll come back to you, comrades. I think we resolved that way. That the person who is asking, let her exhaust her share, and then we'll come. And, yeah, comrades, Chuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. We, a June 2008 investigation by the AG identified a restrictive practice that a substantial amount of information and supporting documentation provided by one bidder were exact duplicates of information provided by one bidder and constitute either fraud or non-compliance with the Competition Act of 89, Competition Act number 89 of 1998. What is the status of this issue, and have the various procurement irregularities as identified in the report been addressed? Subsequent to that, in a footnote to note 28 on page 195, a mention is made of irregular expenditure amounting to 53 million that is not included in the note as investigations are ongoing. The committee understands this is a broken down into the following four main concerns. I don't know if I should take a break to list the four. Yes. I think you should have. Number one is 29.7 million to Siberia Consulting with regarding to tax clearance certificate in the name of one of the affiliated companies. Number two is 13.8 million to Lichabile with regards to tax clearance certificate not on file or misfiled. The third one is 3.4 million public service regulations require that an approved policy must be in place before overtime can be paid. Number four, it's 7.8 million. The AG raised a finding relating to the awarding of security services and questioned the process as the bids were evaluated for a second time before the bid was awarded. Can we talk on that?
I hope the Siberia you spoke about is not the N2 gateway one. Huh? The same. Well, it's the same name, but I'm not sure if it's the same people. But anyway, let's talk to the substance.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start off with the investigation by the AG on the transcription services tender. In terms of the restrictive horizontal practices, we got feedback from the matter was referred to the Competition Commissioner, and we got feedback about 3 weeks ago, concluding that the relevant service provider has not contravened any sections in terms of the Competition Act, and they have, however, recommended that we refer the matter for forensic investigation in terms of the findings of the Auditor General, which we have done. So. That is the latest progress I can provide on that matter. In terms of the irregular expenditure then listed by the Auditor General on page 195, the 53 million and the breakup provided by the member, the latest status for the Siberia contract, that is the 29 million, the tax clearance certificate that was in the name of one of the affiliated companies, and not, in other words, the tax certificate was in the name of Siberia Technology, whereas the bid was in the name of Siberia Group. That condemnation request, duly motivated, is in the process of requesting condemnation from the relevant authority, in this case, the Director General. In terms of the 13.8 million that relates to the Lechabile payment, in that specific case, although we disagreed with the Auditor General that it should be irregular because the tax clearance certificate was misfiled and we could manage to produce a copy of it. We have also requested the Director General to consider condoning that irregular expenditure so that we can dispose of it. In terms of the overtime policy not in place and the expenditure of 3.4 million therefore being regarded as irregular, that condonation request is work in progress. We are working with our HR component to prepare the request to the Director General once again in terms of that irregular. In terms of the 7.8 million, that was a specific tender for our guarding services. The DBAC, the Bid Adjudication Committee, at the time that they had to consider the recommendations by the Evaluation Committee, picked up that there were manipulation in terms of the scores of the Evaluation Committee. Therefore, we could not refer it back to the same Evaluation Committee. The matter was discussed then with the previous Director General. And our recommendation team was that, based on guidance from the National Treasury, that we reconvene a whole new committee and we redo the whole evaluation process, which is what happened in that case. I think all that is outstanding in terms of that matter is for me to sit down with the Auditor General and take them through all those facts where the manipulation was picked up, and then obviously to assure them of the right procedures were followed. So we're still in disagreement that it is irregular. Therefore, it was reported only as a footnote to that financial. These were irregular at the time of the finalization of the audit, still under investigation. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. So far, if there's one word I've heard more than any other, it's condonation. Seems for everything that goes wrong, condonation. Why? Because so far what has come through in this segment of the hearing is that there is a tendency not to follow rules. And when rules are not followed, how do you solve the problem? And then there is peace. I'm saying that's the impression that you get in this side, and it's not a pretty one. And members have not even gone to say, let's take each case and say, what are the basis for condonation? Siberia Pty Limited has tendered, and then they submit the tax certificate of its subsidiary, Siberia Technologies. I don't know a lot about this thing, but I'm struggling. Unless if DG, you say, you know what, we had a big problem, there's a big rot here, and the only way out is just to erase everything and then start on a clean slate. We accept these things are wrong, we're just overwhelmed and have no capacity to do anything about it. But I'm not, we're still at the starting. And we seem to be taking much, much longer on this. Chilwan, and then before we move to the next one, I'll give those comments one to make follow-up.
Yeah, Chair, it might seem that I'm taking a lot, but...
not you. All of us.
Yeah, Chair, but maybe on that note of this condonement that we are noticing is the main problem. I don't know if Treasury could be able to come in and just tell us what is the status of this condonement that really happening in this department, with your indulgence, if you could give them a chance.
Because all sinners go to National Treasury and they're cleansed. And it might be for a good reason. It's just that when it happens over and over again, there is concern from this side. Can we get a sense from National Treasury at a generic level, and maybe in terms of specific cases that would relate to what we've been talking about?
In terms of practice note 5 of 2008 or 9, before we go to the practice note, we only condoned the RT3 contract. The rest were condoned by the relevant authority, who was the accounting officer in those cases. The RT3 is a blanket condemnation for finance lease agreements that were not followed in terms of the relevant practice note issued. When we condone, we have an engagement with the department. We don't just condone. We look at the lease agreements, for instance. We will interview the relevant officials to find out what happened, and then condone where necessary. Where not necessary, we do not condone. We do look at whether there is a loss that has been suffered by the department, and what is the extent of the non-compliance to the regulations that we've issued. So I can assure the House that we do not just condone. We follow what the practice notes say, but we also look at the circumstances that led to the irregular expenditure.
Can you talk to this circumstance?
If I look at the one that the RT3, we would have looked at, for instance, we issued this.
So you don't have the details,
yes,
for this condemnation.
Yes.
I think that's what you should have said. So
yeah,
we don't keep it at the realm of generalities. I wanted you to come to the specific instance of the 34 million. What I would have wanted you to speak to. One that, just like the AG, people who are here from Treasury must be able to talk to the details of what is here. Otherwise, not assisting us, because we are not coming here for general lessons. We are coming here to deal with specific issues that arise from the annual report. So, alright, okay, now it's fine. I think it's something that we'll need to correct. Well, if you have specific information related to the 34 million, that's fine. But beyond that, I think at a generic level, you have the first part, you have spoken to it. It's fine. But if you want to speak to the 34 million, yeah, okay.
The 34 million, the lease agreement, it was read as if it's operating lease. However, when you look at the details, it met the requirements of finance lease. That's why we condoned it.
All right. So it was more at a technical level than substantive level. Chula?
In essence, Treasury only confirmed the condonation of 84-1. The others then, who had done them? The former DG or who, the CFO, to forgive the officials in the department who have done it wrong for what?
No, I'm on the same page, Kumbe, 194. It is the accounting officer who condoned the 74 million due to inadequate delegations to departmental bid adjudication committee. Maybe let's check from the AG. What does this mean, inadequate delegation? Because it would mean that, yeah, maybe talk to it. who have an understanding of what it means.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, what happened in 2005, there was a new supply chain management practices which required that there need to be a specific committee established which will approve all the contracts, if you can say as such. But what happened, the delegation has not been drawn up by the department. So the committee that approved those contracts did not have the delegation. So it was more a technical irregular expenditure that occurred. And subsequently, when we identified that, management did draw up the correct delegations to give the committee the approval to agree up to enter into those contracts.
Thank you, Chair. We now come on the fruitless expenditure.
Thank you, Chair. Can we have a follow-up before Madam goes on?
No, we can't. As per our decision.
It's only regular.
Yes. Fruitless expenditure is a matter of emphasis of the matter on paragraph 23, page 147. It is the committee's understanding that possible fruitless expenditure was incurred to the amount of 18 million and that this results from costs incurred when the department prepare a user immovable asset management plan in terms of the relevant legislation. The issue is as follows. According to the AG, the department did not make use of an offer by the Department of Public Works to participate in a process where... participate in a process where the Department of Public Works appointed a service provider to compile a UAMP on behalf of the department. Two, the AG indicates that the total budgetary implication for the Department of Public Works for the completion of the AUMP for 29 government departments and 10 agencies amounted to approximately 1.4 million. The cost incurred by the department amounted to 19 million, and the AG is on the opinion that the difference of approximately 18 million must be regarded as a fruitless expenditure. Can the department explain why it did not take up the much cheaper offer offered by the Department of Public Works?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. When we had to respond to this audit query at the time of finalizing the audit, it was quite difficult for the CFO's office to respond because of the technical nature of these two different tenders, the one by Public Works as well as the one by our own department. We therefore then agreed with the auditors that we would get in an independent evaluator to assess the two different bids in terms of the scope and the outputs and the outcomes, and then give us a report on that to take the matter forward, because we could not agree that there is a huge difference in scope that justifies the difference in value. That report has been finalized last week, and in essence the conclusion confirms that the DPW exercise was a desktop exercise based on information that DPW provided to that service provider, who's in this case, and I would like to mention the name because I want to add something to it. In this case is Afrikaan Engineering. So it was a desktop exercise populating UAMPs for different departments, for entities, whereas our bid provided for a physical, go out to the offices, do a site inspection, do a condition assessment, and populate that information into the UAMP. Therefore, the difference in price. Afrikaan Engineering also submitted a bid for our tender, and their bid price came to 22 million for the same scope of deliverables. So the conclusion in terms of that report, which has not been shared with the auditors because I only received it last week, confirms that there is a significant difference in the two different tenders. And obviously my next step would now be to sit down with the AG and go through the findings of the evaluation. Thank you, Chair.
One will just want to get an understanding. What has made it difficult for the department not to take a sister department and decide to go out of their own way to get another service provider, whereas when you check the difference in terms of the payments we were supposed to pay, we could have saved, and we just said, no, we can live with the 18 million irregular expenditure, fruitless expenditure. And how do we get convinced as this committee on this money to have just wasted, to have just gone somewhere where we don't know? If maybe we can get an indication.
Okay. I think the Act is clear to say that the responsibility to draw up a user asset management plan is that of the custodian. In this case, the department. So all these public works buildings that we make use of, it's our responsibility as justice to prepare an annual and to update our user asset management plan on an annual basis. At the time that this decision was taken by our facilities management unit in the department, that message was given through to DPW. What came out from the evaluation is that condition assessment that you can only perform by going out physically to that court, populate the information, is critical for you to prepare your user asset management plan, which is used for your basis for your budget applications or your budget proposals to National Treasury.
Okay.
Can I just conclude, maybe?
No. I think the essence or the substance of your response is Public Works decided on a project, and in your view, it was an inferior process or project, and you went out to do your own. That's the long and the short of it. So you now have a better management plan, and the rest of government is using an inferior immovable asset management plan. That should be the outcome. That should be the long and the short of it. There can be no other outcome, because from what she's saying, the reason that other one was rejected was because its approach could not give a qualitatively better outcome, because it was a desktop approach. And the investigations have actually confirmed your position that what you did was better. So which means whatever Public Works has done, it cannot be equal or better than what you've done. That's the long and the short of it. Yeah, I don't want us to take it sideways this way and that way. That is what it's all about.
I think when one tries to test her own or our own committee's understanding is that the Department of Public Works, if we want to spend 1.4 million for 29 government departments and 10 agencies, while Justice Department spend 19 million, I think that's the gist of the matter, that we are concerned about it. And probably maybe the portfolio committee will be better placed to deal with this issue. But with me, I don't understand. But on that note, I'll pass then, go to the restatement. Maybe some other members will come in as they make comments. I'm moving to the restatement of corresponding figures on page 147, paragraph 24. The following corresponding figures for 31st March 2008 have been restated due to errors uncovered during the financial year ended 31st March 2009. Could the department provide an explanation on each and how it plans to provide this from recurring? I don't know if I could list these as they are, or you do have them. Should I list them? In note 22, page 190, on contingent liability, claims against the department have risen by 16%. In note 23, on page 190, on commitments restated with 257 million, up to 98%. In note 25, on page 191 on employees' benefits, restated to 283 million. Note 27, page 193 on receivables for department revenue, restated with 139 million. Note 30 on page 195 on key management personnel, restated with 82 million. If we can get a sense and indication. Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of those restatements of corresponding figures, the three key reasons why we had to restate relates to additional information that was obtained. First, changes in the disclosure requirements, for example, changes in the classifications as required by the Standard Chartered of Accounts, which is the chart of accounts issued by Treasury, and duplication of figures between the department and the NPA. In other words, we both had a specific number in one of those notes. So those are the key reasons. Some of the reasons, like the second one in terms of a change of disclosure requirements, is obviously beyond the department's control, and it's just correct to go back and restate your comparative number for that year based on the new requirement for the current year. In terms of the duplication and the additional information that was obtained, I think this matter relates back to the issue that we discussed first in the hearing, which is the disclosure notes at this stage, and I generalize it when I say disclosure notes, it also applies to the leases notes, gets compiled from manual interventions. In other words, those disclosure notes relate to accrual accounting information, and because our basic accounting system does not cater for accrual accounting at this stage, and it's not an integrated system, we need to implement manual interventions to obtain the information for the financial statements. In this manual process, which entails getting information from all the over 700 courts and collating that, there's bound to be errors in terms of the compilation and the consolidation of that information. For this current financial year, if I may move forward in terms of how are we then addressing this, because we will have this problem up until the point that we have an integrated financial management system. For this year round, we are not expecting the offices to prepare those inputs to these disclosure notes. We have gone out, we've provided training to those people, and we will put a CFO person in those offices and in those regions from mid-March to the end of April to assist them to compile that information, get it quality checked, and then when it gets sent to national office, it's a matter of consolidating whatever's already been verified. So we have changed our approach because of the challenges. Some of those restatements were justifiable in terms of the changes, but some of it as a result, Chair, again, of the governance processes, if I may call it that, in terms of the decentralized environment. Thank you.
All right, any quick follow-ups? Right, Mutambi, Matladi, Teal, and Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Back on the user immovable asset management plan, one understands that the Department of Public Works is the custodian of the properties. And then they came to you and say, we have got a service provider whom will fund at our own cost. And then you went on and say, we want our own. I want to check, is there any evidence available that made you to take that decision to say maybe the work that the service provider, the Department of Public Works appointed, was doing an inferior job or whatever, or was just purely the disregard of the cooperative governance as enshrined by the Constitution? Because one cannot get the sense out of it, because as COPPA we are concerned about value for money. Now the service provider has been provided to you and then you opted to go to take another service provider.
Thank you, Chief. At the time that the decision was taken, obviously the decision was then based on the review of the DPW tender and deliverables, which led to the conclusion that the desktop exercise will not give us the desired result or the results that we would like to have in terms of our user asset management plan. The scope differences are evident in terms of the two bits. However, comparing the two bits, you don't get a sense of why 18 million rand difference, which is why we asked for the independent evaluation of it. We took it a bit further in terms of the evaluation. We then said, give us some of those UAMPs that DPW provided, and let's compare that. Let's look at that outcomes and output in relation to our document. Both the two examples that we produced, the service provider on DPW side came to the conclusion, this is based on the information provided, however, site visits need to still be conducted.
So the difference was site visits?
The difference was condition assessment, which would be done, obviously, Chair, by site visits, physical audits.
So you just say yes?
Yes.
Okay, do you
want to make a follow-up? Yeah. The other one is on the seat, the things that were not condoned.
Now, let me go to Matlat. Because the contract was held by CETA, it expired, CETA did not inform the department. So, but let me go to Matlat.
Chairperson, I've got two follow-ups. The first one is the very same that we have been discussing about the Public Works Department versus the Department of Justice. Chair, that last paragraph in my notes is stating that investigations are still being done. Then my question is, on what? Investigations on what? And secondly, I would like the department to come out clear and tell us that they are contesting the report of the Auditor General on the fruitless expenditure. Because when the Auditor General says, this is fruitless, why should you make investigations? Because it's clear that it is fruitless. So are you contesting it? On what ground? That is my first question.
Chair, thank you. Based on the evidence in front of me, which is the independent evaluation by a engineer, yes, I'm disagreeing with the Auditor General that it should be regarded as fruitless expenditure.
What should happen? You disagree with the Auditor General, then what? It ceases to be fruitless. And wait, what should happen?
Chair, I think I mentioned earlier that my next step would be to sit down with the Auditor General and go through the findings of this evaluation.
But before you sit down with them, what is the position? What should we take? Should we take what the Auditor General has written, or should we assume there is a dispute, there is no decision on this matter?
We believe that before the report is written, the Auditor General calls a meeting with the department and discusses the findings with them before this report can come out to public. So to come here and tell us that you are disagreeing when the report is out is irrelevant.
All right. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That's what is in the report that has come to Parliament. In terms of how it will be sorted out, that's something else. But as it stands, this is what we have. Sing? Let me go to Sing. Yeah, I'll come to you, Steve.
What song do you want me to sing? Chairperson? Chairperson, I just have one request and two questions on the broad heading of irregular and fruitless. The one is, I don't know if we could get a copy of the contract with Siberia Technologies at some stage. We've had experiences with them, and if it can be made available to the committee. The question that I have is, if I heard very carefully, Ms. Gom said, when asked about the 3.4 million run under the additional irregular expenditure, on the overtime policy, that it's work in progress. Now, I don't know if I'm misunderstanding that, because I would take it that the department is involved in paying overtime
to people at the moment. So is there no policy which governs your overtime payment of any member within the Department of Justice? That's my first question. And if there's no policy, why? The second question relates to transfers and a possible fruitless expenditure. Now, Chairperson and colleagues, the Department of Justice is involved in making transfer payments to the tune of 1.2 billion rand to various entities, legal aid board, etc., etc. I'd like to know the basis on which transfers are made from the department to these entities. And I'm asking this in particular because we are informed that one of those entities, which is the Commission of Gender Equality, I mean, they've had no audit committee, no nothing, no financial statements or anything of that sort for the last 2 or 3 years. And yet there are transfers being made from the Department of Justice to the tune of about 43 million rand to the CGE. I mean, how does one justify this? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure it wouldn't be a problem to provide a copy of the contract as requested.
All right, let's get it by next week, end of this week. Yeah, sure, end of this week.
In terms of the question relating to the overtime policy, and without trying to hide away from the matter, the fact of this matter is that the department applied the DPSA policy in terms of paying overtime. There was a change where the DPSA rules then require for departments to have their own overtime policy. In that period, which is up to 2008, the department had not yet developed a policy on overtime. Therefore, the expenditure is regarded as irregular. So what I want to conclude with, we did not use nothing. We used the DPSA rules in terms of overtime. There was a requirement, however, that we have a departmental policy, which was then put in place soon after the matter came to our attention. So I don't want to say it's technical irregular, but it is a technical matter. It's not as if we operated in a vacuum in relation to the payment of overtime. In terms of the transfers to entities...
But then why didn't the Auditor General understand that simple explanation?
Jay, in terms of the guidelines and the Treasury rules, if there is non-compliance with Public Service Act, Public Service Regulations, PFMA, etc., the matter is regarded as irregular. Once you've confirmed that there is non-compliance, it's regarded as irregular.
Let me just understand this. Is it that Public Service and Administration just woke up one morning and said, from today, develop your own policies and stop it? Just respond to the last part.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the transfers to entities, we've got public entities, in this case the Legal Aid South Africa, as well as our special investigating unit to whom we make transfer payments. For those payments, there are certain conditions attached to the monthly or quarterly transfer, which relates to evidence that there's adequate financial management in place, audit committee, internal audit reports that we produce, etc., as well as whether the funding has been utilized for the purpose intended. Then the other entities that we make transfers to, like the CGE, relates to our constitutional entities. And Johan Johnson, my chief director in budgets, has been seconded to the CGE for a portion of, or for a period during last year, to assist him with their financial management matters. I would like him to just conclude on that. But in essence, what I'm saying is there's no conditions that we can impose in terms of constitutional entity transfers versus the public entity transfers.
All right. No, it's fine. I think your answer captures. We don't know the details of what is happening at that entity. We'll meet them at the end of March, but we wanted the principle. So with constitutional entities, no conditions. So money is not given up. Still?
Thank you, Chair. A couple of questions, but just a general observation. We've basically... Yeah, that's going to be two. We seem to have a problem of institutional memory in this department. We've basically only heard from Mrs. Gon, and that's probably understandable given that she's the longest-serving member of the delegation that is here with us today. And that is a real problem in terms of institutional memory, when we actually don't have a senior management that's been in place for very long at all. It really is part of the problem of management and decision making, I think, in this department. That's just a general observation. But part of the litany of explanations that we've had for the various audit queries, one of which is that matters have had to be condoned, yes. The other is that the Department of Justice does not have an integrated management accounting system. Now, I've looked through the capital expenditure projections, and I cannot find an amount projected for integrated management accounting.
No.
Is it in the plan?
Still no.
No, it's a question, Chair. Is this in the plan?
No. You are the second person after Shilwa. And I'm not sure if you were now starting with your focus area.
No, I'm not sure. This is arising specifically from the answer that we've got.
Yeah, I don't want you to be tempted by that answer because we're dealing with irregular expenditure. So I don't want you to ask questions that might infringe on...
Well, can we get an answer to it now? Otherwise, I'm going to have to repeat it later.
No, you'll repeat it later.
Okay, well, that's not very efficient as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, if we can have a direct question then on irregular expenditure.
Sure.
On page 195, we were told with relation to the 53 million rand identified that the explanation here was that the matter had been referred to the Competition Commission and that no contravention of the competition requirements had been found, but that the matter had been referred for further forensic investigation. Now, I'd like to know on what basis did the department suspect that this matter had to be referred for further forensic investigation? What is the information? What are they not telling us?
See, the same information that was included in the audit report for 2008, in other words, it is definitely, or we suspect that there's cover quoting. It's one person having different companies. I think, again, the fact that the Competition Commission called us in for a discussion on the matter before we received the letter that they could not find any contravention of the Competition Act, but recommended that we refer it for further investigation, supports that the suspicions of irregularities.
Comrade Mashiane, and then we move to Steele.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to note that the CFO is all over, and I'm not getting a head of a tail of what she's saying. Keep it simple, ma'am, so that we understand you. I've never been so confused in a hearing. I am today. Now, my question is that in terms of your condonement, it looks like you have a tendency of in-house condoning. To me, it's a cover-up, ma'am. Cover-up for the wrong things that are happening within the department. It's very clear you only go to the National Treasury when you've got facts. When you don't have any fact, then you cover up. And I think this exercise of covering up must stop in the department because that's taxpayers' money and we need to have value for money. I don't need an answer to it. Thank you.
I wanted us to go to...
Yes, I was up there. Unfortunately, you couldn't recognize my hand because I'm short. Chairperson, very quickly. Very, very quickly. The adjudication committee is located at the national office. That is the explanation we got. Then they deal with all the leases of the regions all over the country. That's what is that. All the leases, like I said before, in Portugal, for instance, is done national or is done regionally. Is it done regionally? And then I'm covered on that one. A very quick one. Page 194. Non-compliance with department supply chain management. There is, according to this, this matter is still under investigation. This is 207-209. What is the status of this investigation as we speak?
Which amount?
5.5 million. 194.
Oh, the 41 cases. Oh.
Yes. What is the status according to this? When this was compiled, the matter was under investigation according to yourself. What is the status of this investigation now?
This 5.5 relates to the various cases where quotations and bids were not obtained for the training conference facilities. And the current status is that we're preparing the condemnation request that must go either to the DBAC at National Office, where they have authority in terms of the thresholds, or then to the Director General in terms of those matters over and above the authority of the DBAC. Obviously, those condemnation requests will contain the facts of the matter, whether anyone can be held liable in terms of what transpired in that specific case, whether we've suffered any losses, whether anyone was disciplined. So all those different aspects are being considered when we do the investigation. So those matters are, we're preparing the condemnation request as I speak, to get the matter finalized. As I said, we have also, subsequent to those scenarios, we have appointed a service provider, which then takes away the obligation on different, like Justice College, whose business it is to provide training, to invite quotes. We still get quotations, but you're not getting different quotations. You use a service provider that assists you with these quotations. So we have closed the gap in terms of the non-compliance, but the irregular expenditure must still be disposed of appropriately.
All right. I think that is the correct procedure. But what is not coming out very clear to me on this side, and it's important to always raise this element about what will happen to the officials involved. Because the moment you say we're preparing for condemnation, it's like we're preparing to dispose of the matter and forget about it, you know, without raising the element that condemnation or approval does not amount or equal to not taking disciplinary measures against people who, you know, who have contravened, you know, the rules and the regulations that are there. I think that's the point we want to hear more, because it is not the first time the department appears before us. And these issues of deviations and non-compliance are there, they're persistent. And if we don't get that point coming out stronger and we hear condemnation more, it's like there are no consequences for not following the rules. As long as we've got value for money, it's fine. Right, Honorable Steele?
Thank you, Chair. We're going to start looking at the section on non-compliance with legislation. Perhaps worth reminding this committee and the officials that the department's mandate is to uphold and protect the Constitution and the rule of law. And protecting the rule of law, I would have thought, entails specifically compliance with the financial regulations that are contained in the PFMA and issued by Treasury. So can we start then with paragraph 29 on page 148 of the annual report? Section 38 of the PFMA states that the accounting officer must ensure that the department has and maintains effective, efficient, and transparent systems of financial and risk management and internal control. And the table below that paragraph indicates the various deficiencies with regard to the management, to that system of financial and risk management and internal control. There are root causes of the deficiencies indicated. What I would like to hear from the department, please, Chair, is an explanation as to why they have not been able to maintain these systems of management and control, and more importantly, what they're going to do to implement what is required by the PFMA.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I want to take a general approach in terms of responding to the non-compliance, whereas we, the Department of Justice. In the process of coming up with action plans to address these deficiencies and analyzing the root causes that led to these audit qualifications for the last number of years, we divided it into what we like to call a risk and control framework, and we've defined it to be our governance, our people, our methods and practices, and we analyzed that further. So we have, in terms of root causes, established that in terms of governance, there's specific shortfalls. In terms of people, there's specific limitations in terms of vacancies, in terms of skills, in terms of organizational staffing structures in the regions, in terms of methods and practices, in terms of our technology, in terms of our systems, in terms of our manual intervention in this decentralized environment that makes it almost impossible to operate and to comply and to get a clean audit. What is it that we're doing about that? I think critical for us is we needed to determine and establish the root causes. In terms of addressing those, and again I want to say governance, people, process, systems, we've established different task teams where it's required. For example, the one example I would like to use is the financial statements task team, because in our strategic plan, we aim for an unqualified audit. So we're establishing this task team to transfer skills to the people out there, but also to produce quality information for the financial statements. In terms of supply chain and asset management, which you would agree with me...
Chair, before we even get there, we need to get some detail, please, as to the nature of the deficiencies that have been identified. We've heard about governance, we've heard about staff capacity, and we've heard about systems. We need to get some sort of plan from the department with timeframes which indicates how they're going to address these three areas of deficiency, and I'm sure that the rest of this committee would appreciate getting some kind of specific feedback, if not now, in writing from the department within a very short space of time. They say they've already got the plan developed. We need to see it, please.
So what are you requesting? That the plan be sent to us, or you want details to be given now?
Clearly, we would like to hear some substantive details now, Chair, but if there is a plan in existence, which we've been assured there is, then I think this committee needs to be furnished with that within a very short space of time.
All right. They can do that by Friday. Isn't it? It's there. Just email it. So, all right, let's get the plan. But can you talk, not in very big details, but in briefly say, this is what we're doing, this is what we intend to do, this is what we've done to try and address this.
Thank you, Chair. I think if one look at the audit findings, as I've said, the majority of the non-compliance relates to our supply chain management arena. Currently, we have a significant vacancy in that area, and however, we are starting to fill the positions. For example, the chief director post has been filled in January. The director will start in March. Now, in supply chain management, and we appeared before this committee a year or so ago in relation to the same matter, there's a process which, Chair, with your permission, I would like to give a handout to members, a one-pager, on supply chain management, the process in terms of addressing those areas.
Just give the
info, yeah? So that will deal with the supply chain, and I can quickly talk through that. terms of capability, supply chain management capability, which is the first line there on that one page thing, we're saying because of our vacancies, because of the skills gaps, we at for this financial year we're at 50% and projecting in terms of the plan, we next financial year we would be at 77%. In terms of procurement effectiveness, and we're obtaining this by means of a whole business process review that's been finalized. Alongside with that, we finalized the organizational structure for supply chain management. At this stage, only national office, regional office will follow. We've beefed up the supply chain management policies and procedures. In our decentralized environment, we use standardized policies, standardized procedures to ensure consistency across the country. Operations efficiency, you'll see again there, 35% for this year. Next year will be 72%. So we've reviewed these business processes. We've got the structure defined now. Now we need to fill that structure with the right people, and we need to implement the improved business processes in terms of making sure we get got a compliant supply chain management division.
I see that I decided members should be given right now. I see you starting from a very low base. Really? So you employ people who have no culture of compliance or respect to rules, who just do as they please. I'm looking at the figures on the far left. Supply chain management capability, you are at 25%. Procurement effectiveness, 15%. Policy compliance, 50%, and you want to improve by 5%. Complying with the policies. So what happens to people who don't comply to policy? To the rest of the 70%, 45, 65, and 60%, where there is no compliance on all these areas for the financial year that is ending in the month that starts next week.
Hey, Mayor. The overall, I think compliance is a fundamental issue for us. But I think within the supply chain management environment, that's where I think we are saying there is an incremental process in which we will be assisting in the build up.
Not talking to what I'm saying. I hear you. It's incremental. I can see that. My point was, you're starting from a very low base. You are with compliance, you are at 50%. Now, 12 months down the line, you want to improve it by 5%. And then the next year, increase it by 40%, 95%. I'm just saying from this side, it's not a good picture that you have these levels of compliance. They are very, very, very low. Otherwise, you have anarchy. If you only have 15% effectiveness in terms of procurement and your supply chain management capabilities at 25%. It is quite a worrisome position, or situation, let me say. And I see the plan, what you want to do, it's good. But I'm saying we're starting from a very, very low base that is totally unacceptable as a base. For any department where you have employed professionals who are actually law inclined, because the Department of Justice. But let me go back to Steve. I was just making an observation.
No, Chair, I think it's very fair. The only way I can describe this plan is that to say for financial year 09 and 010, the department is effectively planning to have another qualified audit. Because there's no other way that they're going to receive anything different based on this kind of performance level. And regardless of their base, you know, to actually plan for a 30% achievement from a 25% base is beyond negative. But if you look at some of the details here, Chair, I'd like some explanation for some of these. Process and structure implementation. Develop supply chain management manual. That's only happened last year. PFMA has been around for a long time, and now they are developing a manual. They're establishing bid committees. That was last year. It seems to me almost as though the PFMA has existed, or rather this department has existed in isolation for the PFMA for the last 5 years. So how can these things now suddenly be implemented? And what has happened for years and years and years?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chair, your observation in terms of we're starting from a low base is the answer to that question. It's not that we did not have a supply chain management policy. We did have an approved policy. We're improving that. It's not that we did not have business processes or a process for supply chain. We did have it. We're improving that. We're making sure it's compliant. We're making sure our system supports that. We're making sure our people...
Right. Yeah, I fully agree with you. The issue is compliance. Those things are there, but nobody cares about them. They just do as they please. I think that is the point. To have the policy and the procedure is a good foundation, because then you have something to guide people. But then if you have people who disregard those processes, it is a serious problem. And I think it is that mindset for those who are in, and for the filling of the vacancies to have the requisite women power or manpower, that needs to be followed.
Thank you, Chair. That section dealt then largely with the control environment, but the section on page 150, paragraph 38, deals with the performance management by the department, management of the performance in terms of the planning, monitoring, measurement, review, and reporting of the department, and equally, this has been identified by the AG as an area where the department is not compliant. Now, do they have anything additional to add in terms of the explanation that we've already had for why they are not compliant with the PFMA when it comes to performance management reporting?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Steele, for the question that we have raised. First of all, I need to just acknowledge that we do have a strategy unit that has been established. I think, in my view, it has not reached the maturity levels. It's still very much in its infancy. And I need to indicate that there are a number of things that our strategy unit is able to do to be able to address the concerns that we have raised. We do have the capacity to prepare strategic plans for the department. And those strategic plans are used broadly in the department to prepare performance agreements that all officials in the department must sign and enter into with their supervisors. We are able to produce quarterly reports. We are able to interact with all our, particularly regional offices and various branches of the department, to prepare quarterly reports, which culminate into our preparation of annual reports. I need to indicate, however, that we do have some challenges. And part of these challenges is, much as we have the capacity to do certain things that I have mentioned, prepare quarterly reports, prepare the strategy, prepare annual reports, we do have challenges, and these are challenges of capacity, human beings, professionals. I am happy to report that by the 1st of May, I would be in a position to have appointed a chief director who will be responsible for strategy, and I would have employed 4 assistant directors who will be able to assist us to address the concerns that have been raised.
Doctor, the issue here is non-compliance. non-compliance. See, when you talk non-compliance, it means you have warm bodies who are doing their own thing outside what you would have developed.
Yes, Chair, there was a degree of non-compliance, particularly because of the capacity challenges that are raised. We had wanted to produce a strategic plan on
we have asked that please switch off your cellular phone. Wherever you are and wherever you are.
Yes, Chair.
The point I'm making is that, you see, the question of non-compliance. Well, is it proving that compliance is a very difficult thing to do? Well, the point I'm making is that non-compliance is done by people who are already in the employ. You see, and if a department or a section needs 20 employees and it only has 15. It is not a reason why the 15 should not comply. That's where I am. So irrespective of whether you get the other 5, if they are 20, then there will be automatic compliance. Non-compliance talks to the few that are in the department are not following the processes that you would have, you know, laid down. I think that is the problem. Before we even go to vacancies and how we need to fill the vacancies and all that, the few that are there are not complying.
Chair, I do agree. We do experience problems with the few who are there. And part of the problems that we're experiencing is that we battle to get the information that we need to prepare this report on time. And I'm conceding that we need a much tighter management and supervision of these.
You are a senior of somebody at regional level. You say, fax me a document, and that person just ignores you, and life goes on, just like that. What happens when people don't comply?
Well, Chair, we make follow-ups. We are in the process of developing...
Please comply.
No.
May I try? It is true that in certain areas we've, as a department, and in particular as management, we have, I guess, taken our eye off the ball in certain areas. And not in everything, we've done a sterling job in terms of turning the corner from where we were at the end of the financial year to where we are today. We've made significant progress. It may not be progress that is required to see us through at the end of the financial year, but we've made progress. So, for instance, again in asset management, in spite of our struggles.
All right. Maybe we should talk more about the areas that are still lacking.
Yes.
Because if you have managed to do certain areas correctly, that is what you're employed to do anyway.
Yes, sure.
So we need to talk more to the areas that are challenges. I think maybe let's take the first part. But yes, management maybe has taken its eye off the ball sometimes in terms of effective monitoring and management. Thus, these challenges of non-compliance. Dave?
Now, Chair, could we start with a very simple matter or just hear some detail about it? Staff contracts. If we're talking about performance management, we have to have staff who have contracts that are signed. Now, quite clearly, this department has had a problem in holding its staff accountable because contracts have not been signed. Now, can we have an undertaking that all of these new staff that are going to be appointed and existing staff all have contracts signed and in place so that there can be some management of their performance outcomes?
I give an undertaking, Chair, that that will happen.
Why has it not happened before?
No, Chair, he was referring to the new staff that we employ. With the current staff, most of the staff members that I'm aware of, if not all, do have performance agreements in place.
Not all.
That are evaluated. I do not have the figures with me, but maybe DD Jacob presents would assist, but I think the majority do have performance agreements in place.
Is it an impossible expectation that all of them should have performance agreements? The few that the department has, seeing that you have vacancies.
No, Jay, it's not an impossible expectation. It's what is required of public servants.
Can I draw the attention of the department to paragraph 27 of page 147, where non-compliance with the public service regulations include the last two bullet points. Job descriptions and titles were not reviewed at least once every 3 years. And the next bullet point, all newly appointed employees did not have signed written contracts of employment as required. Now, these are the findings of the Auditor General with regard to compliance in the matter of staff contracts and job descriptions. Now, I want to hear, are these regulations now being complied with?
Chairperson and Honorable Steele, we can confirm that, one, all staff in the department have performance management agreements. We can confirm that in a number of cases, the employment contracts were not in the files during the year 2008-2009. And the department is going through all of the personnel files to ensure that each and every employee has an employment contract on file.
I think we need to remind the officials, as the Honourable Ainsley said, and particularly for those of us that come from the land of the elephant, that we have very long memories when it comes to these kinds of undertakings. And if the department is now making an undertaking that all staff have contract signs, we will expect that to be upheld.
But before you continue, but why do we have this finding? Was this really necessary? What are the constraints that led to this kind of finding? Surely it's not skill.
The finding is with regard to employment contracts. So when somebody is employed, there has to be a contract signed with the person which is put on file.
Right.
Now, in many cases, or at least in the samples that were drawn, which indicated that there is a general problem in the department, those employment contracts were not found on file.
That I understand perfectly well. I want you to tell me something new. Why did we have this finding? Why was it like that?
That was poor management control.
Why poor management control?
In the sense that HR did not check.
Why did HR not check? Why did HR not check? What are they being paid to do? Who is from HR?
I am.
Why didn't you check?
We check on a continuous basis. This is personnel files for the whole country, which we have for the regional of files. Those files, the registries are in the regions. For the centralized branches, those files are at national office. Now, we continuously check between the HR unit and the registry unit to make sure that all of the files have all of the information up to date.
So why did we have this finding then?
The finding arises from the fact that the management was not tight enough at the time to ensure that all of the files are...
Why was punishment not tight?
It relates to the issues that the committee just addressed. Also.
Which one?
The skills, the capacity, the level of compliance of the staff.
What skills? To check files if the contracts are there. I mean, you say you're checking files continuously. So what is being checked?
What would you check is that when the employee gets employed, all of the documents that should be part of that employment are in the file.
You know, I thought you would say to me, look, we didn't do our work. We didn't do our work. That's the long and the short of it. Talk. I want to hear you talk. We didn't do our work. That's the long and the short of it. Cut through the fat and say, that's the problem, that's why we have this finding.
Essentially, that's true, Shatta.
I think to follow up the issue of HR with the point on page 147 under 26 Treasury regulations, and it follows very closely from what we've been hearing from the head of HR, the third bullet point under Treasury regulations, which is not to do with supply chain management, it's to do with basically the paymaster's operation. The person in charge at the respective pay points did not in all circumstances certify that all persons listed are entitled to payments. Now, this would seem to be a very, very simple administrative function. Somebody is appointed, somebody has an entitlement to a particular earning according to their grade or notch or position, and yet according to this point in the AG's findings, the person in charge did not always certify that. Now, again, it comes down to basic management and control. Have these persons been identified? Have there been any disciplinary consequences?
Again, with regard to the certification of the salary, the payroll services, it is the case that during the financial year in question, the level of certification and the controls of that were weak. It is the case now that between the HR people and the payroll services in the office of the CFO, there is tighter management of the and follow-up of the certification so that when managers of the pay points receive the salary advices, they certify and send these back on time to the payroll service section.
So it is the same people, but they've pulled up their socks.
Largely, yes, Shepherd.
So the possibility exists that they can actually flip back. Because the same people, they know how to pull up their socks, they also know how to, you know, to relax.
The management level has been jacked up in the last 2 years or so.
But the finding we're talking about is only last year.
Yes, it's 2008-09.
So this happened in a management jacked up environment.
In a management chairperson that was complimented during the year under review.
No, I'm saying, yeah, I hear you. Okay. All right. Still?
Well, Chair, you might be satisfied, but I'm not, because I'm not hearing the language of accountability. I'm not hearing who has been held responsible for this particular deficiency identified by the AG. We're not hearing accountability. We're hearing condemnation.
Well, I thought I heard the gentleman well, it is a management problem, a leadership problem. Leadership problem. It's simple and straightforward as all that.
Mm. Can I continue, then, Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. To return to page 150 on the performance management problem, in paragraph 38, the first part of the paragraph deals with the fact that there is no efficient and transparent system. But then it concludes that paragraph with a very disturbing comment indeed. The current draft policy does not address key control elements expected in a policy. The AG's finding, up until the end of the last financial year, 09, was that their draft policy was not adequate. Now, what discussions have been made with the AG or whoever to ensure that the draft policy is going to be compliant for this financial year, which is fast running out? Otherwise, the same matter is going to come back again. But this is a very, very disturbing finding, that the management of this department has attempted to address the control problem and hasn't produced an adequate plan.
Chair, we are in the process of developing a plan to address these deficiencies.
Who drew this plan?
The department has drawn the plan. The strategy unit in particular,
which you all occupy different offices. Who was responsible for drawing this plan?
The monetary management review and reporting plan is drawn up by the strategy unit
in my office.
So
you are responsible for this plan?
I am responsible, Chair.
Okay, continue.
We are currently reviewing our performance monitoring and review. I'm happy to report that I think by the beginning of the new financial year, we should be having a plan in place that will address these deficiencies, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Can I then go to the question I raised earlier with regard to the integrated management accounting system? Because that is going to be a critical part of the control plan, and I'd like to hear some indication as to when and where that is going to appear in the department's planning, because I can't see it anywhere in the budget.
Thank you, Chairperson. And maybe Treasury would like to add to this once I've given my response. Currently, there's a moratorium on the development or implementation of any financial system because of the development of the transversal integrated financial management system by the Office of the Accountant General or the National Treasury. So it's not within the department's power at this stage to develop any systems that's integrated. However, at the time that the integrated financial management system development started, we already had our own procurement system in place, the JYP or the Justice Yellow Pages system, we called it, and the integration to the financial system, the BAS system, was work in progress. With the result that Treasury then said, continue with your procurement system, but at the time that we convert to the new system, make sure that you integrate in that process, which we agree. So if everything goes according to our plan, 1 April this year, we will switch on that integration between our procurement and our asset management system and our financial system with the consent of the National Treasury. Now, in terms of the Treasury integrated financial management system, the discussions with Treasury, we talk about 2 to 3 years, but then we talk about implementing loose standing modules, in other words, an HR module that will take care of some of the problems we have in the HR arena, a supply chain management module, asset management module. So none of these integrated in terms of an IFMS that we would require to comply to all the accrual accounting disclosure requirements. So that is the broad timeline. We're trying our best to comply with it, but it's not within our arena.
Thank you, Chair. That's one of the best answers we've had so far. Neat, concise with timelines and with deadline for delivery. That's actually great. That's what we want to hear in SCOPA. Thank you. Chair, could I then turn to the investigation progress? And I'd like to start by just highlighting the points made on page 150, paragraph 31.
Can I just check with the National Treasurer that the timelines and the substance that we've been given is totally in line with the what you know and what your plans are, and that you are responsible for holding departments back in terms of an integrated system?
Sorry, Chair, that I will have to be general because it's not my field of expertise. I come from the Office of the Accountant General. The division within National Treasury which deals with IFMS, its specialist function. But I do know that they are piloting the asset management model and also the HR module. I also know that they've already started developing the procurement or supply chain model. Obviously, Justice, if they want to be part of the pilot, they should contact specialist functions to be part of the lead staff. So for now, I'll have to go general,
right.
And I'm sorry about that.
Okay, still continue.
Thank you, Chair. Paragraph 31, page 150. Investigations. Various allegations of financial misconduct and irregularities are currently being investigated. We note from elsewhere in the report on page 126 that the audit committee has made various recommendations to management with regard to investigations. I'd like a fairly detailed reply as to the progress of these investigations and specifically as to why there are concerns relating to the fact that there have been time delays in the reporting of the misconduct, that investigations going back to 2004 have not been resolved, that no clear actions have been taken against officials involved in misconduct, no progress reports provided, presumably, to the Audit Committee or to the Auditor General. There are clearly concerns with regard to the actions by the Department. Again, we come back to the language of accountability. I'd like some very specific details as to how these investigations are being handled, what progress is being made, and what consequences have actually followed.
Yeah, how many investigations are we talking about in the first place?
And Chair, we do have data of all these investigations. But in our process of looking at this report, we noted some issues that are of concern to us, and we'd like to be given an opportunity to submit the report.
Do you have investigations going back to 2004 unresolved?
We do have those investigations, Chair. We do have those investigations. If I can give you some of the figures and raise what our concerns are with those figures, we have about 132 cases that are finalized. We have 44 cases referred to SAPS. We have cases referred to HR 49. We have cases referred for legal liability for 20, and we have about 173 cases that are in progress. However, when we look at the data, we realize that even on those cases that are not finished, we don't have sufficient details to give you specifically what those cases were about and so on. So we just would like to be given an opportunity to just check our facts, and maybe we can submit this Friday, Chair, with your permission, to make sure that the facts that we give you are more reliable.
I think we should accept that, but I'd be particularly concerned with the 173 that are still in progress. We need to know when they were initiated, why there's a delay, and what resolution is in prospect. But we cannot have a Department of Justice with 173 cases lingering on. So if we could please have some detail in that report on the not just the conduct, but also on the progress. If that's acceptable to the committee?
Yeah, no. I think let us get that info. Is it possible to do all these cases involve
money. Some do involve money. Some are related to Asia issues. So not all cases involve money. Some do involve issues of fraud and corruption.
Can I go to some specifics, please, Chair?
Yeah.
Page 183 and page 184 of the report, under material losses, there's been check fraud of 2.4 million in the last financial year. That is an increase of 1.2 million. In that financial year. And on the next page, under theft, there have been again an increase from 312,000 to 550,000 burglaries and theft, 458 as opposed to 195. In other words, the problems of control with regard to both fraud and theft have actually increased from the previous financial year to this financial year. And I'm very concerned as to what the department is doing in terms of mitigating against that increase. What measures are in place to stop this?
Chair, again, I'll raise an issue that whose details I will give in the report. But we do have a risk assessment unit that conducts risk assessment in all branches of the department, and after identifying the risks that are there in our environment, we do work with various units to develop mitigation plans, and then it becomes our...
You see, doctor, the problem is that your compliance levels are very low. So you have your committee, you have your plans, you go around, you do this, but once you drive back to head office, people just continue what they've been doing all along. I think that's the point, and that's the challenge, that's the issue. It's not developing policies, it's not training people in what needs to be done. It's people continue to do what they're used to doing, which is not complying with the policies and procedures that are in place.
Chair, I understand your point of view, but if you look at, I think later on our DDG Corporate Services will just brief you about the misconduct cases and the outcome of those misconduct cases and the areas that have been covered in the misconduct cases.
You
will then get to see that action is being
doctor,
taken on this matter.
Doctor, the last time we had a hearing with this department, two, three years ago or so, the then DG said the high number of disciplinary cases we're having are clearest sign that we're effectively dealing with issues of non-compliance and all that stuff. And I think we're here today and you're saying the same thing. Not that we're disregarding the efforts that have been done. No. I'm just saying, let us continuously be reminded that we're starting from a very, very low base. Very, very unacceptably low base of compliance. Policies, with regulations, with everything, that would make the department to deliver its services and live up to, you know, to its mandate. I think that's where I am, without disregarding the efforts. I was trying to make a quick arithmetic thing. The cases that you listed, there are about 416 overall, 416 cases of non-compliance with policies, procedures, and regulations. Now, whether that is very high or low, I don't know, but 416, even if it was 416 rand, that would be a lot of money to me. So, and we have not even checked how many people are involved. And what percentage do they constitute of your overall staff complement? At what level? You know, because that also has a bearing in terms of what is the culture within the organization. Are there people at senior management level? You know, so I'm just trying to say, let us not let us keep it in the back of our minds that we're dealing with a fundamental problem, huge, huge problem that will require courage and stamina, especially stamina, to go the whole hog.
Yeah, your comments lead very naturally to the next question that I want to, or the next two questions I want to ask, which are related specifically to the disciplinary hearings and their outcomes. I have two questions with regard to the table on page 229, the consequences of disciplinary hearings in this department. My first question is related to the number of dismissals, 21, given in the table on page 229. And I'd like to know, please, Chair.
Where is that?
The number of dismissals, 21,
right.
Top of the page. I'd like to know why that number is not the same as the number on page 217, table 5.3, reasons why staff left the department. Dismissal for misconduct permanent is given a 63. You know, are there 40 odd dismissals for misconduct that have just kind of disappeared through the cracks? I'm just concerned as to the discrepancy of that. And then, Chair, the second question that I have relates to the what I think is alarming number of resignations as the outcome of a disciplinary hearing. Because the number of 18 is nearly exactly the same as the number of dismissals. Now, presumably, when officials resign from this department, they retain their accumulated leave benefits, they retain their pensioner benefits, they retain... In other words, they're walking out after a disciplinary hearing with no consequences. No financial penalties whatsoever. And is the department doing anything to actually... ensure that when an official found guilty at a disciplinary hearing resigns, that there are measures taken to recover whatever was misappropriated, stolen, or wastefully expended?
With such very low levels of compliance, I think we're having very low levels of disciplinary steps or measures being taken against officials.
Chairperson of the committee and Honorable Steele, I would like to undertake that we'll give a more detailed report about the cases of dismissals as reported by the end of the week, by Friday. In terms of the process in which we deal with the cases of dismissals where the official has been convicted of fraud, the official is dismissed and steps are then taken by referring the matter to legal liability, which is a unit in the department, to pursue the recovery of the debt. We shall then provide a detailed report on each of the cases.
But what about those who are resigning? Do we not have people who are facing disciplinary cases who then resign as a way of...
Similarly, Chairperson and Honourable Members, where an official resigns before the conclusion of the... That is taken in those cases as admission of guilt, and therefore the matter is also referred to legal liability to recover the monies that may have been lost. I must just say to members that many of the cases involve low-level staff that take away monies
relating to various payments to members of the public, and therefore the department follows a zero tolerance approach with regard to the disciplinary.
That tolerance doesn't seem to be effective. If you take into account your low compliance level, that zero tolerance is just ignored. I hear the conceptual position. We don't tolerate these things, but who cares? Comrade,
it will be very useful to get a report on these dismissals by the end of the week. What would be equally useful, Chairperson, if resolutions of SCOPA, which incidentally become resolutions of Parliament, not just of this Committee of Parliament, resolution of SCOPA on this matter was discussed at the last hearing. I'm not too sure if you attended, and you were asked within 60 days of this resolution going before Parliament to give a detailed report on all these disciplinary cases. And to the best of my knowledge, we're still waiting for that. Now you say the number's up to 400, 500. But really, okay, by the end of the week, give us this report. But honestly, we want you to implement the scope of resolution which calls for a full report on all of these cases, which you have not yet done, which is absolutely unacceptable. You are in contempt of Parliament.
All right. I want to move to Bejan. Yeah.
May I carry on, please, with my other question?
Yeah.
Because you see, a root cause of the problem is in the HR department. You see, that you do not have the skilled people to run this department is quite clear. And again there, you're in contempt of the scope of resolution, which simply said, the last time round, simply said, critical positions must be filled. You haven't done so. But I was a little excited when I looked at page 6 of your report. A little excited, Chair, when I looked at page 6. Because on page 6, it says, in the middle of the paragraph there on the right-hand side, the number of placements in the department has increased to 8,190 from 5,490 last year, resulting in a 6.5% growth. I was very happy with that. I would well at least give them credit for that. But then I began looking at the other figures in this report, and they don't tally up. I want to refer you to page, because the figure I get is not, the figure I get is 4,053. Not the figures you give. If you look at page 215, at the very bottom there, appointments and transfers to the department for the period 4,053. And if you look at, that's page 215, you got that, 215. Also, if you look at page 221, also the very last figure there under total is 4,053. Again, so I can't tell you these figures. If you can perhaps just clear up a little bit of the confusion. What is the increase? What is the actual figure? What is the correct figure? What is the increase?
The correct figure, Honourable Member, is 4,053. The figure that is on page 6 was incorrectly captured.
Now you see, now I must go through this and report from the first page to the last page to look at badly or incorrectly captured figures. Honestly, if there's one figure, Chair, that is incorrect, how much credence can we give this entire report?
Chair Pepin, I've actually personally gone through the tables in part 5. And checked the accuracy of the calculations and everything. And I can assure members of parliament that if we went through those tables the figures there tally. The
I think you'd say no. This is the only incorrect figure in relation to what is on page 6 and what is on page 15. Because his horror is that if this was written, given to you for proofreading, and the mistake went through, how many other mistakes are there in this report? Because already we're talking about, there's a case of the number of dismissals. On one page it's one figure, on another it's another figure, to which you said you'll supply some information later. And this one is confirmed to be incorrect. So it raises questions. Is this the only incorrect information in the report? Well, you wouldn't know. And whatever your answer will not be confirmed. When I say confirmed, in that you can't say, let's go through the report. I'll show you from page 1 up to page last. Let's leave it at that. We don't want to get inconsistencies as if you don't go through this report yourself before they are produced. I think that's the point. Chuan?
Thank you, Chair. I want to make a follow-up on page 183 on the material losses. There's a report of a check fraud in the Guardian Fund that was fraudulently deposited and cashed. Loss was investigated by SAP. The loss could not be recovered. The loss amounting to 2.4 million. Chair, one sitting this side will just want to check if it's because it's for the Guardian Fund who are deemedly legally incapable of looking or manage their own affairs. If maybe we could check on that, if we will be facing a situation, I will be saying maybe next year something has been condoned in amount of 2.4 million for the guidance.
No, let's do this. Can you park that question? When we come to Matladi's time,
okay.
If it's not raised, then we can raise it. I'll give Pretorius, I'll give Mangena, I'll comrade, and then Rafa Hoshi Philippine. Our is it the Napoli?
Chair, thank you very much. My first comment relates to the point that we refer to now that we're not the only people who doubt the accuracy of the details under HR. If you refer to page 147 of the report, the Auditor General himself or herself says the substantive documentation to support the information disclosed.
Where on page 147?
Number 25, paragraph 25.
25, okay.
It says that the documentation, entire documentation for section 5 is unreliable. So.
All right, just wait a minute. Let's go to page 208 as well, so we have a sense of...
It's from page 208 to page 231. In other words, the entire section about HR couldn't be verified by the Auditor General. But be it as it may, sir, I want to ask a specific question about some information contained in it. We've heard so many things now, and I think we all agree that this department is in dire straits. But despite that, if you look at table 5.7 on page 223... and 5.7, the end of it, on page 223 and on 225, the second one, about performance bonuses, performance rewards. Performance rewards to the tune of 28.5 million was allocated to staff in the last financial year.
Which page are you talking about?
223.
223. Which part of
the latter one, table 7.1?
7.1. Oh, yes.
You would see that in the second last paragraph, 28.532 million rand was
was allocated as performance rewards?
No. Let's do this. Employee benefits, that's to be done section. Hold it. If he doesn't ask it, you'll come back to it. Yes, Comrade. And then, and then I'll come to you.
Chairperson, thank you. You know, as I was listening to what they've been saying, I was just telling myself, there's a lot of latex fare in this department. I believe these people who are working in that department, when they came there, they just said to them, Malumi Laban, we are going to work there. And Malumi Laban really is doing nothing to see to it that things are being done. Malumi Laban, when you go and work for your uncle Laban, things just go smoothly. Nobody will ever ask you, why are you not doing 1, 2, 3? Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think I just wanted to make one or two comments that probably I have listened to you at pains trying to check who is responsible for what and what was done about that person. But did you look at the entire section? If I look at reporting in line with the law, and I'm Honorable Steve, I thought that was that's where his question was. His question was, I'm trying to not to be irrelevant, is that surely here, if you were to take an exercise of trying to check each and every individual, you would have to fire the whole department. Because if you look at all the things that are here under government responsibilities in particular, the conclusion is that at the top, at no time there was a state of readiness to implement programs in line with the allocated resources according to law, if you were to read all these things. So to me, I'm saying, I don't want to draw the chairperson's attention to the fact that there's a bigger problem than mere individuals. Why anyone would tolerate to work under this current state of affairs is a serious question. The last question is that probably there's a need to improve the relationship between SCOPA and line function, line function portfolio, what to call committees. The reason is that if you look at what the Auditor General is saying on the strategic goals, just to draw the attention of SCOPA, is that if you were to call something like enhancing organizational efficiency as a strategic goal, transforming justice as a strategic goal, access to justice as a strategic goal, you cannot account on the basis of concepts like those. Now, the challenge is also lies with the line function portfolio committee, where some of us belong. I'm trying to say we should also accept responsibilities in when we accept these plans, why do we think they are correct plans on the basis of which accountability can actually be depended upon?
All right. Let us continue to the journey. Safe to say that, as always, the portfolio committee was informed and invited.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think one area that I wanted to raise before I go into question is the acknowledgement of Honorable Kongubele, who meets here on behalf of the portfolio committee. I think we should have been acknowledging him for that matter.
Well, I don't know who the portfolio committee belongs to. I know him as a member of parliament, but that is here, he's a member of the portfolio committee. I don't know. All I know is that we have sent a letter to.
Trying to make you aware so that you acknowledge him, not to make a debate in anyhow.
All right, no, it's fine, continue.
Thank you. Second part, Chair. I wanted to, through you, of course, indicate to the officials here that in terms of Section 181, Subsection 1, Subsection 3 of the Constitution, the manner in which the COO handled the issue of the AG is in contempt. It will be wrong for us to leave here without mentioning that and making her aware of that, and then continue to do that deliberately knowing that.
The COO or the CFO?
If you look at the list, you'll then say to me, yes, you'll come back to me I have made my thorough, you know, analysis of what I'm saying. Thank you.
No, I wanted you to maybe go to the substance.
So no, I will, but Chair, there are some of the substantive issues that we cannot leave here without being attended to. It will be wrong of us.
No,
I will be set up in a wrong precedent.
No, I understand.
So I'm trying to deal with principal issues.
Sure.
That while we are operating on facts and issues, we should always be, you know, upheld the principle of, you know, what is guiding us.
Fine.
Thank you very much.
No, I hear you.
The third one, Chair.
No, just a minute, Kumbi. My quick recollection was that we spoke to the issue relating to the Auditor General. I think it was the CFO. Now, when you say the COO, that is Dr. Hotso, I could not immediately recall him talking to any issue that related to the AG. That's why I was saying, is it the COO or the CFO? Not the principal. The principal, fine.
Thank you, Chair. The third one, Chair, is from the first person who led us in terms of question. There is a willingness and negligence, a part of behavior from officials, that they deliberately, knowingly, and willingly decided not to do their work. And I'm sure they've proven to you, it has been raised by all of us here, and then they acknowledge that we deliberately acknowledge that we failed to do what we were supposed to have done. The quickest example, Chairperson, is the Human Resource Division, which is the custodian of everybody in the department, coming here and said, I'm the person responsible for human resource, but knowing that when I get employed, part of the job description was to keep and upheld that particular files in my custody. But here I am, I'm saying I did not perform my job, and the accounting officer absolutely, willingly, negligently decided to do nothing on that particular exercise. I thought I should bring this thing into our attention. Thank you, Chairperson. Now, my questions are about three, four. The one which was more or less interrelated with Group 1, which I wanted to start with, which is finance lease commitment, Chairperson. I'm sure you might have heard that I've even made an attempt to raise it, because I realize that it's interrelated with what they were asking. But it's clearly that an amount of 63 million, Chair, was not disclosed, and therefore the AG could not make an opinion on it. I heard that there are this thing of decentralizations of administrations of what the contracts and lease commitments and all this. I'm not interested in that. My interest is based on who was responsible for doing this, that at the end of the day, the 63 million is undisclosed, and therefore there's no opinion on it. Can we get the person? What happened to this person?
What?
Okay, may I just request that we be referred to the relevant paragraph in the report? I'm just not on the same page currently. Thank you.
Chair, that's page 146, AG's report 13. Under finance lease commitment, I can just read there. I'm not a scholar in any way. I'm a politician. I can easily identify the figure of money, but the sentence leading to that, it's something that I'm far from attempting to do.
So on the fifth line, the extreme right on page 146. The second word there is should read finance. Just small mistake.
May I respond?
Yeah.
Thank you. Note 26 deals with the lease commitments as a result of this 3 year or 4 years or 5 years lease contracts. And one of the other questions is what is it that we're
On which page is not
192, Chief. We're leasing photocopiers, printers, basically that's what we lease. So note 26 deals with the future commitments in terms of these contracts. Now that note, as one of the disclosure notes I've discussed, were prepared based on this national database spreadsheet in terms of information. So the period would be there for all these leases, the amounts, etc. Now, when the AG requested the supporting documents and the contracts to substantiate these numbers, we could not provide those, which is what the qualification and the other paragraph is about. Therefore, they concluded to say, because of the absence of the supporting documentation, we cannot satisfy ourselves that the disclosure notice...
No, that's fine. I think that is what is in the report. His question is, whose responsibility was that? Somebody, person or persons, and what has happened to these people who could not supply the necessary documentation as required by the AG?
Thank you, Chair. I think ultimately it would be the CFO and the accounting officer's responsibility, because it's our responsibility to prepare these set of financial statements to answer the first part of it. But I've also mentioned earlier that we're dependent on the officers out there. With a limitation...
Who was running those offices? I think now let's take it to the second phase.
Yes.
In those offices, who runs those offices?
Each office has got a court manager, who's usually a legally qualified person. And then there would be 4, 5, 6 court managers reporting to an area court manager. The only finance staff that you would find in offices would be those working in the cash halls, dealing with the third-party funds, the maintenance, bail, those monies. So we've got very limited financial skills in offices. We expect them to produce these information for the financial statement disclosure notes, which is accrual accounting disclosure notes. And we expect to get an unqualified audit on it, which is why we had to change the approach for the current year. We cannot expect the impossible from the people in the offices.
No. If you read on page 146, paragraph 12, what the AG could not get were the lease agreement. So that is a document. Nothing to do with financial skills. All I wanted... a document of agreement about the lease. So I think the first part of your answer was assisting us. So you sitting at national, people enter into agreements at the lower level. You have a court manager, you have an area manager. And then from the area manager, what do you have? Do you have a provincial manager, or they then report directly to you?
Now, Chair, we've got a regional office then, which consists out of a director court operation, so the people in the courts, those two that I've mentioned, will report to the director financial, director operations, court operations. The regional head in the region office is also supported by an HR director and a finance director. But in terms of the court structure, they report to the director court operations, who reports to the regional head, who reported in this period under review to the previous director general.
All right. So from the region, it's to the Director General. Okay.
Chair, can I repeat my last part of my question? What happened to that culprit? You have mentioned that your office, where you are sitting now, it's part of the failure. What happened to you? Maybe the accounting officer in this regard can respond. Because failure to deal with you, therefore, accounting officer, you should know that Section 81 of the PFMA will then be applied to you. It's punishable for any official to fail to, you know, to adhere to what he's supposed to do. It's punishable. And punishment is in a various ways.
Not necessarily that you must kill or strangle a person, but you should apply what the law said you should. What happened to this officer that is now declaring to you that I am the one?
At this stage, nothing has happened. And I'm saying at this stage because we are talking about the previous year. So it doesn't mean that nothing will happen, but it just at this stage, nothing has happened. Thanks.
I'm sure the accounting officer is aware that the report before us, it has been released to their hands around September. And our understanding is they have gone through each of their reports and then identified the deficiency identified by the AG with the sole intention of rectifying those things. Did they make their work? Or is it us who are doing their work now? Are they seeing this deficiency for the first time because we are raising it? If they knew about it, what happened to the people that committed this deficiency?
It is true that the report was released a lot earlier. It is equally true that we as a department have looked into the report and we are implementing, obviously, in various cases, we are implementing intervention measures to try and address and turn the situation around. And I think let's start on those bases. So that work is ongoing. But that work is a combination of many things. It's a combination of asset management, it's a combination of vacancies and all of that. Inclusive, obviously, of that process would be disciplinaries that arises as a result of some of the areas that have been identified by the Office of the AG, included in that process.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Chair.
Sure. I think the thrust of this question is, if people do not comply, are there consequences for those people? The corrections that you are talking to try putting systems, making sure there are all these necessary conceptual frameworks to get the work done. But we just spoke to the issues of non-compliance, even to some of the existing frameworks. Now, his question talks to, are there consequences when people do not comply? And the simple answer that has come through is that those people who led to the department getting a qualification, nothing has happened to them. Because you are sitting at an office, you request documents from the region, and none is forthcoming. And yet, somebody who is employed, who is paid, is supposed to manage. Somebody signed a lease agreement, unless if they just went into a building without a contract. Somebody signed it, was supposed to file it somewhere, when it's needed, pick it up, provide it. Somebody didn't do that, and nothing has happened.
Hey, I fully agree, and I do not disagree with that. All I'm saying is that, and I think at the beginning we agreed that our controls have not been as strong. We've agreed that on the issues of governance, we had not been strong. And if I say governance, and I don't want to generalize, in terms of just our management of contracts in particular, I think we started on the basis that we have not been strong, and yes, indeed. As a result, in a manner that EXCO has concluded right now, I think in about 2 weeks ago, we've concluded that we will take that responsibility and at least oversee the contract at EXCO level, which we had not done before. Now, I do agree that, and the point that I was raising, Chair, which relates to has anything happened to those individuals specifically, that was just the part I was trying to respond to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yes,
Comrade. Chair, I think Honorable Gungubelo will agree that the portfolio has got a lot to do. Till now we are dealing with post-mortem. What have happened? And then we wanted to know, what are you doing with what have they've passed? The planning is for the portfolio committee, which we have got very little. Of course, we will work hand in glove with them. But we are focusing on
the damage behind you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Unless there are any additional from other members. Thank you, Chair. Then my next question is in relate to employee benefit, more or less a similar character of the one I've just asked. Is the similar process of failure to deal with the issues the same as in this one? Because in looking at that one, it's even worse. It says 397 million.
Where are we coming?
Oh, page, the same page.
Which page?
Paragraph 11, under employee, 146.
Oh, okay, all right.
Under the same employee benefits, 11, it goes further again, it says, an amount of 397 million and 214 million. The AG could not tell us what exactly happened because documents to back up that were not again, not anywhere to be found. Maybe this time we'll get better reasons why they were not available, this one.
Information and explanation were not...
And the person who didn't do that, what happened again, as you conclude?
Who manages leave? Who manages leave? It's HR.
Chairperson, honorable member, Tovejan. The department has been looking into the weaknesses in leave management and has identified already during the year 2008-09 weaknesses which gave rise to the findings of the AG, and with tightened up on the management of leave. Now, the reasons were late capturing of leave, late submission of leave for capturing.
I know that late capturing is not a reason. We wanted to know the reason why late capturing. That's exactly what we wanted to know.
The late capturing arises from the fact that leave is authorized throughout the country, and the forms, the application, leave application forms, are then sent to 10 centers. One is national office, and then each of the 9 regional offices, which are essentially provincial offices. So when leave arrives late at the capturing center, because of the weaknesses in management at the office level, then that leave will be captured late. Now, the response that we have taken looking at the report is to try and assist and counsel the officials involved, and we have started a process of publishing internally the leave stats, so that...
Okay. I thought we'll simplify this matter. The amount that the comrade has read, do they relate to what you are supposed to pay or what has already been paid?
The amounts that are referred to in the report relate to provision for leave not taken. Can the CFO just deal with the figures?
Jamie, the amount relates to the value of leave credits as at the reporting date. In other words, should all go on pension or resign at that date, that would be the obligation for the department in terms of paying out for those leave. However, I think it needs to be noted as well that that amount is as a result of the extrapolation by the auditors based on the error rate in their sample testing. Thank you.
Well, which does not make matters any better anyway. I think if you had answered like the DG, to the shortened our discussion. The weaknesses, poor management, no supervision, so things are not done. That's why there's late capturing. Person can submit a form today, it is captured next week. So the fact that it was captured late is not the problem. The problem is that somebody gets to the office, talk about Kaiser Chiefs or the Bulls the whole day and not do their work. All right, Pirates or Sundowns or whatever, or the Sharks, or and not do their work. And that happens because there's nobody who monitors and supervises people. That's the long and the short of it. Because it's information and explanation. Continue,
Comrade. Thanks, Chairperson. But I think HR, you are aware that part of the responsibility of the accounting officers is to set up systems that will make sure that effectiveness, efficiency, and transparency as per the PMFA, it has been emphasized by Section 38.1A. I'm not an official, but I know these things, you know, by my heart, because I'm working with them. You should have been knowing them better than me and said, when this happened, it means I should shoot this person or I'm going to be shot. So in this regard, it's like systems are not there, hence you are saying somebody in Mafefe, official, will have a process of bringing this late. There's no system there. Then it tells you that that particular section has not been adhered. And therefore, somebody should just say, here I am, like Jesus Christ, Mbapule, crossinate me. But basically, that's what should happen. Thanks, Chairperson. I think if there no addition, of course, on the same note, we should get to the person at the end of the day as the implementing the findings hereof. We should then be able to see heads rolling. Because we can't have a government that we are keeping on saying, hey, no, it was an error. And there's no error in government. It's negligence and willingness not to do the work, the reliction of your duty. So those are the terms that we should talk in SCOPA. And not mistake, oversight, no, we don't do that. Oversight is done by Parliament. They should just, you know, call the right terms that there is a negligence, that there is a, you know, derelictions, and so on and so on. Those are the terms in the system of, you know, public servant. Can I pass if you allow me?
Chair, sorry, on a point of order, the previous speaker in his speech has used no less than 3 means of capital punishment in one speech. I think we should assure the officials that he's speaking purely metaphorically.
Okay, all right, okay. Continue.
Thank you very much, Chair. because it doesn't make
not that some of you do not have those impulses.
I'm afraid, Chair, I feel like, you know, we're wasting energy and then bullets we are shooting over the sky. When the packet comes, we are not going to have bullets to shoot. Because the same question will repeat itself on the next one, the issue of capital and minor assets. The same thing, because the failure to submit is the same thing. Do I have to waste my energy? I'm not sure whether I'll get food to replace my energy. Can I reserve it, the little that I have?
All right. Then
I want to the DDG on corporate services to address on the issue the whole country. We understand that the department is a national department, and there are other departments who are similar to you who are complying. So this issue to say it leaves coming from the whole country, it becomes immaterial DG, because when you accepted that responsibility, you knew you were dealing with a national department. So we don't want to come here and hear excuses that leaves coming from all over the country, because there are similar national departments that have complied. And then the question is about disciplinary measures. To say, we are seated with a situation of non-compliance, and then nothing is said, like the colleague was asking, who did what? We want to be given progress reports on action taken, because somebody that is generic is supposed to cap and capture all those leaves, and that person is not doing anything. He or she is still in the system, and nothing is being done. We'd like to get that progress report as well, progress through you, Chairperson.
Yeah, Comrade Tobijan, don't derail us. Because you see, I'm saying don't derail us. Because when you look at this document, it says that in many of the aspects, in less than half the time, or in more than half the instances, they will be compliant. So, which means your challenge of control is going to be with you for quite some time, in very, very significant ways. So the point you're raising, it brings us back to this. This is where we are. But I hear you. You wanted to jump 9. And okay, fine.
And then go to 10, Chairperson.
All right.
The reason why 10, it's for simple reason. If you go to the guiding documents, which again is PMFA.
PFMA.
Whatever. it calls for this committee, auditing committee, on page 126. That at most it should be twice, but in this regard they were then approved for 5. But they said up to 10 times. Can we start by getting what were the financial implications of this additional unauthorized sitting of the audit committee? Who authorized this unauthorized sitting of the audit committee? Can we start there?
I must indicate that we had requested the chairperson of the audit committee to be here, but unfortunately, because of the way things are, it just could not happen. So he's not here, but I suppose those that are here will be able to respond to that question.
Thank you, Chairperson. The audit committee deliberately and decided to have more meetings so that they can monitor the situation in terms of addressing all these problems. So therefore, the additional meetings. In terms of the financial implications, I'll have to get back to you with the details. I don't have that with me.
Okay. All right. No, let's keep it on the straight and narrow, comrades. Do you have a follow-up question, or are you going to number 11? No, I want to check if there's a follow-up question.
I'm not even about to go to 11 because there's no answer there. From what she said. She's as good as she was quiet. Because I'm saying they know that they're coming to appear here. And then amongst other things is this thing to say, there is this thing that has been raised by the AG to say this committee has set more than the allocated and approved, you know, period. What might have been the implication in terms of finances? Dealing with finances, he said, no, I left it home. And let's agree, Chair, to give a date to say, can we have that by that particular date? And at the same time, that financial implications, if are not going to be justifiable, they should also bring them with the aid of a person that will be taking charge of that money, attached to that list.
No, on that, I wanted to check, is there a standard stipend per sitting? What is the amount? I think we can do some quick arithmetic. What is this standard sitting allowance per meeting?
Chair, I don't have that detail with me.
Okay. All right. So then it can be sent later. All right. Okay.
Now, further question, Chair.
No, linked to that, Chair. Chairperson, linked to that, I'm interested on this very same question. They said more than the stipulated time allowed. Who approved that? That they must sit, they're supposed to sit, suppose it's 10, I think. They sit for more than that. Who approved that?
Maybe, TG, if you have the answer now, give it to us. If it's not there, in that note that we'll be talking to the sittings, just indicate what is the law, what does it say. If it has been transgressed, who gave the condonation? Then through the Comrade Roy?
Perhaps I should be asking my questions to the person who's absent. But I feel I want to ask anyway. I want to ask how effective this audit committee is. Yes, they've met 10 times, but so what? You see, what have they achieved? I mean, do we set targets for these audit committees to actually meet certain particular targets? And I'm confused by the report on the audit committee on page 126, in paragraph 3.14 and paragraph 3.15.
Page
126.
Okay.
In 3.14, it says there are no unresolved issues. How on earth can an audit committee issue a report saying there are no unresolved issues, but get again a qualified report? There are many issues that must be unresolved. So it doesn't make sense. I'm not sure if you can throw light on that, but as I say, it's the person who ought to be, who is not here, that should be answering. And likewise, 3.1.5, you are happy. Audit committee is happy with the content and quality of the monthly and quarterly reports. You can't be happy. What is in those reports? You can't be happy with those reports. What is the content of those reports if they don't address the very issues which give rise to, again, another qualified audit? What are they dealing with in those reports if they're not dealing with the very issues all morning that we've been discussing? So, Chair, it's to me, it's confusing, really, what they did at these 10 meetings. Yes, I agree. It's perhaps irregular that they met 10 times. I couldn't care, maybe personally, if they met 25 times. Hank, but if they, at the end of the day, they achieved your objective, which you've said is a clean audit. But they haven't. It's just mumbo jumbo.
All right. Comrade Tobijan, let's move to... I will get a formal report. Pretorius, I want to move to Matladi.
Chair, can I just make my comment, which I was interrupted previously, about the performance, the HR system?
Yeah.
I refer to the fact that the department is almost sinking, it's almost a sinking ship, but despite that, they paid performance bonuses of almost 28.5 million rand last year.
Where is that?
That's table 7.1 on page 223.
Wait.
223, page 223.
Table?
And you say, what is the figure that has been paid?
28.532 million rand was paid in performance rewards just to all staff. If you page over to the table 7.4, there's a further breakdown to say that of that amount, 1.976 was paid to senior management. Now, my question relates to Band D. Two recipients in Band D received 145,000 rand in performance bonuses. Is my assumption correct that Band D is the director general, or who is that? That's the most senior band indicated here. And if it is the director general, then my question is, who makes the decision? Who decides that the DG or whoever else deserves as a performance bonus? I would leave it by that. I need to know who made that decision and whether Band D refers to the director general and who else, because there are two people involved.
Is it deserving?
Well, certainly, to answer your question, it doesn't appear to be deserving, but we need to get the answer.
Appearance might deceive. Let's get the answer.
The question on who makes a decision on the determination of the performance of the directors general normally is the minister, in specifically as the executive authority for the department. Thank you. I just need this.
Okay. Can we get clarity that category D refers to the DG? Is that so? DG and who else? DG and who else?
It can be two DGs. No, it's fine. Can you get that clarity? Band D. Who belongs to Band D? Management? DDGs? Yeah. So HR will give a quick answer on that one.
Band D is the Director General and the Chief Operations Officer.
So what happened here is the Minister approved bonuses for them with performance rewards last year while this department was a sinking ship. Do you agree with that?
Let's not put a lot of spice to it. Klaus the good question that we want to ask. Can we talk to the bonuses? How are they determined and what happened, what processes were followed? Do we have a policy? And how is this done?
Chairperson and members, we do have a performance management policy that is in line with the DPSA guidelines. All officials have performance management contracts, and all officials are then assessed by their supervisors, and for grades 1 to 12, the senior of the supervisor then checks and moderates the ratings that are between the supervisor and the official consent. For SMS members, there are moderating committees that are set up that moderate the assessments that have been made. And the officials are rated in line with the performance management policy.
So this is what happens.
That's
for
right.
These bonuses to be given.
That's right.
Now, if you are sitting this side, would you be convinced that there was cause for those bonuses? Hypothetical. All right. That's fine. I'm just saying, you know, what we've been going through this morning, and what the DG, the CFO, COO, and yourself admitted around management, managers managing effectively, efficiently. Maybe it was at a broad, generic level. Does not give a picture that would take us in that direction. But I really would want us to go to Matladi, and I would would say, please, I would really want to appeal. Matlat.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I deal with the third party funds. And I would like to start with the enabling legislation and separate accountability. As far as this is concerned, in the department, there was a decision taken to make the TPF an entity. An entity with its separate annual financial statements. And this decision was also given a rider by the Accountant General on the 27th July 2009 that it be so. But you have got to understand that when you formulate an entity, there are some steps to be followed. There has to be a personnel or a trust that's taking care of that entity. You have to have a board or a body that is accountable on behalf of the officer in charge, accounting officer. And it means that the staff component that is dealing with that entity is not the departmental staff. It's separate from the department itself. And then if you have got all these things that I might have not mentioned all, it means that now you have followed the required legislation in order to have an entity lawfully. Now, as regarding the Justice Department, they took this decision to make this TPF an entity without following proper legislation. Now my question is why? Why did you decide to make it an entity without following the proper requirements that are needed to make an entity?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member. I think the establishment of a separate reporting entity has not happened. The third-party funds are being administered by the same people that administer the voted funds. In terms of the accounting standards, these funds relate to administered transactions. And all that we say to Treasury in the various interactions is that we should separate these administered funds and transactions from the voted funds, which is why they're separate financial statements. In terms of establishing this possible a trust or separate entity as agreed to by the Accountant General, we need to change some laws. And we're in the process of looking at those specific legislation. So we have not, in fact, established a separate entity. We're preparing separate financials for those two reporting.
Chairperson, I'm confused because I'm reading the annual report of the department and their decision and what they have done. And to prove that they've done what is written in their annual report, the financial statements of this fund, third party funds, are done separately. They are not part and parcel of the statements of the department. And immediately you separate them, then it means that is an entity. So I don't know why she's arguing differently, that it's not yet done. It's done. By the act of separating the financial statements, you have already done it. And then in the previous financial year, when this matter was brought to you, you said that the chairperson, the person who was representing the department, stated that they do not agree with the Auditor General on the matter, and they have sought legal advice on it. That is why they are doing it that way. So I'm asking, why are you doing it? And you know the law. That's my question. Don't deny it, because I've got faith.
All right. I think the straight answer which came towards the end was that they are looking at a administrative instrument. It's not there yet. The only challenge for me sitting here is by when can we have?
Please, I want an answer. I don't want something that is still coming.
No, but
because may I finish my point of order, Chair?
No,
because
don't,
they have
no,
done it already.
No, wait, hear me out. I'm saying she responded, although in a long and winding way, she said they are looking at a legal mechanism. That's what I was saying, that is the part that has not been spoken to in terms of by when should we have this legal instrument sorted out so that we don't have this question coming up again.
Chairperson, it's estimated that the relevant piece of legislation would be finalized within the next year, or let's say in a year's time. What I would like to add to that is the public-private partnership process that the department is also working on.
It's fine. Let's leave that part. So in a year's time, there will be a legislative mechanism that would regularize the situation. Right?
But I'm not happy, but I'll leave it there because the chair overruled me. I just wanted to find out, probing further on the matter, that since the issue was discussed in the previous financial year, why didn't the department come up with what they say they'll be looking for? Because this matter was dealt with in the previous financial year, and they're continuing with it without coming up with what the chair said to say you'd be doing. And then I'm asking, isn't it possible for you, one, if you are unable to get what you're looking for, to take the statements, financial statements, back to the department instead of dealing with them separately? Because when you deal with them separately, that is unlawful, according to the regulation. So why haven't you done in the previous year what you say you'll be doing?
Thank you, Chair. The third-party funds, previously it was operating on a manual system. It's all automated now on the JADA system, Justice Deposit Account System. So the administered funds that I'm referring to is managed on a different accounting or a different system. Let me start with that. In terms of why is it that we didn't bring it back, why did we not start with the legislative changes, we explored as part of the process to address it. We explored avenues such as getting certain regulations issued as part of, in terms of the PFMI to provide for these administered transactions, because we say it's not only our department that's got these administered transactions, there are others. So there's definitely a need for that provision to allow for the accounting of this. The accounting proposal, as discussed with the Accountant General, with the Auditor General, is in terms of accounting recognized accounting standards. So your suggestion in terms of bringing it back, we can bring it back to different systems, and then I think our problems will be all over the show. I think the fact that we disclose it in the same annual report as a separate set of financials with references.
Let's do this. I think the issue was on the delay in terms of having a legislative mechanism. We know that the leadership of the department had a very hostile attitude towards that party fund. And we refused in this meeting to deal with policy issues. Whether it must be thrown out of the department altogether or not cannot come and be argued here, but be argued elsewhere. So we need to accept that I think the handling of the fund and how the department saw its obligation was also a source of a problem. Right, your comrade.
Chairperson, you know Ms. Gam.
Just a minute.
Ms. Gam, I've been on this committee since 2004. Every time you come here, you give us excuses. And there's no implementation taking place. Every time is this story changing into another level or a level below. I think I'm having here a transcript of the things you said to us in 2007. Now, don't take us for fools, ma'am. We read.
All right. Okay.
My goodness.
All right. McLary?
Yes, sir. I'm moving to the second point.
Right.
But I need to register that I didn't get a satisfactory response to the first question I asked.
Now, let's do this. As Comrade Roy indicated, in a year's time, we'll have the enabling legislation. I'm saying that is my understanding of the commitment that is made here. Yeah, before that, because the point that was made, just to reiterate it, because she's raising a point that says it is a bit loose, so I just want to tighten it. I want to get a restatement. In a year's time, this legislative instrument will be in place to make sure that the concerns about the legislative framework that determines the handling of this fund will be sorted out.
Just if the chair could just give me 1 second. I think we discussed the issues of priority legislation yesterday. Yes, it is in the priority list, chair, the admin legislation. So yes, we can commit to that.
Okay.
This procedural question is going to be, I know I'm a visitor. my understanding of the question of Honorable Matlari is that going ahead and run this as an entity without it meeting the requirements of that nature of an entity, why is that done? And I think that is where the answer was not given. Your intervention is about how is it going to be corrected, but she is not satisfied with the fact that there has been no satisfactory answer. Knowing those laws and those standards, why did you go ahead and run it like that? I think that was the question.
You should have said that in Botswana. I would have understood it better. Okay. If we're going to have a legislative tool to assist us to regularize things, why are we not doing the right thing at the moment? That is, treating it as if a legislation is already there when it's not yet there.
Okay, as I've mentioned earlier, my honest view on this is that it is the right thing to do, based on accounting standards. In the 0708 annual report, you will find the TPF financial statements there, even if it's separate, and there's reference to those financials. In the year under review, the 0809 financial year, we were not able to produce reliable, accurate, complete financial statements, which is why it's not there, but there is a paragraph in the accounting officer's report discussing the reasons for that. Chair, I just wanted that to be captured. Remember, I referred to what they said in the previous financial year, that they disagree with the Auditor General. That's why they're doing it, and they're continuing to do it. And the question of whether they will really put the legislation in place is still unquestionable, because she's not convinced that it must go along the way that the Auditor General suggests. So I wanted it to be recorded that way.
She has actually answered
my question.
Okay, it's a bit ingenious.
Just a minute, McLeod.
It's a bit ingenious to say that the financial statements were in the previous annual report. That's true. But the AG disclaims them. He disclaims. So of what value are those statements? Listen to this. This claimed audit opinion on the completeness, the accuracy, and the existence of transactions disclosed in the financial statements. So it's a bit ingenious to say, well, they're there. In what form are they there? In a highly irregular form. And Chair, even on this issue, again, SCOPA resolutions are not being implemented. There is a SCOPA resolution from the last set of hearings on this issue not being implemented, and really at some stage, maybe not now, we as SCOPA have to decide what to do with people who are in contravention, not of SCOPA, but of Parliament.
Yeah, I think let's move forward, but on this understanding. I think the problem, TG, on this side, is that the department will have opinions on certain things, but there has to be a resolution at some point. And in this particular instance, I think that the Auditor General is sufficient authority that if they say this is how things must be done, irrespective of how we feel and how we view things, things must be done that way. Because then, if they raise it as an audit query, we are going to raise it. I think that is the challenge. So let us do what the Auditor General says must be done. And I thought that should be very clear and simple.
Well, Chair. Should I go on, Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the very same issue that is raised by Honorable Roy on the disclaimer opinion of the Auditor General of South Africa for the financial year 2007-2008. I would like to raise this point that because of the problems of no completeness, inaccuracy, and also the existence of transactions, there has been a problem now that presently, as you are sitting, you did not submit the financial statements for the 2008-2009 based on the failure. Now, nothing could be done to look into the finances of the third party funds, although they are in existence and there are problems that are in them. So it has led to having no statements presented, therefore the Auditor General having not audited them. So the main question, Chairperson, is why the situation in this department that is leading to lack of submission of financial statements? Because they're tampering. And you didn't want to have a management board of this entity. You said the staff of the department will do the work. But it seems work is not done. That's why the financial statements were not submitted. Now, I would like you to really shed us light on this matter on both financial years. The other one, without any documents to confirm the completeness, the accuracy, and the other one, nothing whatsoever presented. What can you say to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the third-party funds, we anticipated that we would submit financial statements for 08-09 a bit later. Later as in 3 months later, after end of May. And that was what was communicated at the audit committee, to the Auditor General, etc. Because we were in a process to redo, if I can try and simplify the accounting terms, to recommit bank reconciliations, to redo bank reconciliations from the date that all our courts went over to the automated system, JADIS. So we recommitted those bank reconciliations so that we have improved information, reconciling with what's in the bank with what's in our accounting records. That exercise took much longer than what we anticipated. Today, as I sit here, we're 90% complete with that in relation to the 08-09 financial year, and 60% in relation to the current financial year. So the exercise to get improved numbers or figures or information to put in these financials took longer than what we planned. It was more challenging. As I sit here today, I can give you the result of the 90% rollback, which confirms that this is a much bigger problem than I think than any of us thought it was. In terms of the bank reconciliations, we have an amount of 127 million rand that's in a suspense account as unclassified. So those are money that we have received. We need to pay out to a maintenance beneficiary, for example, but we don't know for who it is. So we need to analyze those. We need to go back to employers where it was electronic transfer, and we need to sort out, resolve as to whose money is this so that we can make the payment. So you can imagine the impact that has on some of these beneficiaries. In terms of differences, unexplained differences between what's in my bank and what's in my accounting records, we have shortages totaling 150 million, that we don't know why is it that the bank is short. We have surpluses totaling 50 million, that we don't know why those surpluses are there. So we need to put in extra effort now to resolve that, to analyze it, to investigate it, and to deal with it appropriately in terms of if it was a shortfall, it needs to follow the loss control process, which is get it reported, get it investigated, recover it where you need to recover it, or write it off if it's irrecoverable. So that process, you might have seen that we've advertised a tender last week, that we want to get in experts to come and assist us to resolve these unexplained differences, which we now see as ring-fenced information. It's definitely not an unqualified status yet, but we feel it's improved information that we can at least come to this committee and we can explain some of those things, which is really the main reason why these financials have still not been finalized. The acting DG advocate, Gianni, during December then approved that we submit two sets of financials at the end of May to the auditors because we couldn't keep the auditors, keep them waiting any longer. So we then agreed with the auditors as well that we will submit both sets by the end of May this year.
Okay. Clary?
Chairperson, I'm sure all of us do hear the conditions in which the TPF is being run. And I'm sure the department can tell us now that they are failing to manage TPF. But still there, Chairperson, I would like to pursue the matter under the audit outcome and history and state the fact that there are no proper accounting records under the TPF that are supposed to be done by the department since 1994, 1st April. And I would like to find out if the unit that is dealing with records is in existence. That is the first thing. What is its staff component? How many staff members are in that unit? What is it they're doing? And what have they done about the missing records from 1994? Actually, I need the progress report pertaining to internal controls of the TPF.
Thanks for the patience. It's not an easy question, but thanks for the question. I think I said earlier that we now know what we suspected this problem is bigger than us. And the previous CFO, you would recall, initiated the PPP process because for exactly that reason. We don't have the system in the courts in terms of producing this set of financial statements. The JDAS is a administrative system. We don't have the right people in the courts to work on these things, to properly take care of these records information in line with the PFMA. And therefore, we cannot produce this. In my own opinion, the PPP is the only solution to address this problem.
Chairperson, the deeper you go, the more frustrated I become. Let me find out from the money that could have been recovered by the department to the tune of 23.7 million due to various shortages or fraud activities in the department, and would like to find out if it has been recovered. If not, why not? And then how will the matter be addressed? Because let me put this straight. TPF, among all other things that are in it, the funds that are paid to it, is the maintenance fund, where the poor women would be running to the justice offices to go and claim whatever cent they can buy daily food and bread for the children, and they are told there's no money. Nobody knows if the husband has paid from that mine or the other. You go away empty-handed. Children are hungry, they can't go to school, and many other things, while our conditions are like this. So really, what happened to the 23.7 million?
Well, Matladi, these days, even men play maintenance, so it is not just women.
Do we have a DG in this department? The accounting officer. Not those who are supporting that person when they are working. The accounting, the PFMA says the accounting officer.
Yeah. Well, in relation to the DG, you know that she became DG in January this year. Yeah, no, I think at a practical level, she will not be able to deal with details and history. That's why on strategic matters, she's able to come in. No, I said I'm talking for the DG.
Please don't talk for the DG, Chairperson. The DG must answer and refer. We have done that in the past, and it must happen.
Let's call it. Let's call it, please. All right, let's answer to the figure that has been. The page? Or...
Chairperson, they will look for the page. I think they should be knowing this information because it's their financial statements and their reports. So somebody will refer them to the page, meanwhile, as they are still struggling to get it, because I don't want to be distracted. I would like us to deal with the instrument they are talking about, Chair. They are talking about the JDAS, that is Justice Deposit Accounting System. And as they are presenting to us, it's like it's a different system that would be addressing the problems they have in order to improve the situation in the department. But according to our report, the very same JDAS has got weaknesses. The very same JDAS has got weaknesses. I can refer to the weaknesses that I'm talking about, if I'm not going to take your time, Chair. I'm sorry.
Please.
Hey, that's stepping me. The weaknesses that I'm referring to, says opening balances brought forward from the manual, from the notes, page 5, from the manual system were not verified and reconciled before they were captured on the JDAS. So you feed the system wrong information, it gives you the wrong answers. And then inadequate testing of the system resulted in errors in the system, such as errors on the bank reconciliation report. And it is a more administrative system than a financial system. The third weakness, the specifications formulated in terms of user requirements were found to be inadequate of the system we're talking about. And also, it had no integration functionality to allow management information to be generated and cannot prepare financial statements from the system. And finally, the training was not adequate to enable the effective use of the system. So I want to present to the department that even if they are coding it, they should know that we know it is not even working. So I would like them to tell me, maybe convince me that it is effective.
I think we started on the basis that it is not effective. I think that's where we started. We said the system is not effective. The system is weak. It was not designed to achieve the things that we want the system to achieve. I think we started on those bases, and let me just reiterate that. So we are not giving an impression at all on the JDAS system that it will change our world. Not, that is not what we are saying, and I apologize if we are understood to have said that.
Now, let's do this. You see, when members become skeptical with responses, and especially when we're talking JDAS, I feel maybe I should be more lenient with them, because when JDAS was presented to us here a few years ago, it was a panacea. They even brought this one gentleman from the private sector to come and sing his praises, and it was like, now with JDAS, everything is going to be solved. And a few years down the line, we now get a frank admission, this thing is not working. So it then creates a problem when we talk issues and we're given responses. But I'm just saying, especially in relation to JDAS, was still fresh in my memory in relation to this matter. So it is a serious frustration, because it was supposed to be the panacea.
Chairperson, in the same breath, I want to find out from the department who was responsible of testing if a JDS would be the relevant instrument. I mean, when you buy a product or you implement it, you must be convinced that it's going to solve the problems that you are using it for. Whose responsibility was it? Ours, to test it for you, so that now it must be the correct instrument. I mean, when you say to us, we have been saying it is not right, as if you want to make now the wrong thing correct. You have wasted money by using the system that doesn't function. And you are wrong to have done so, because you should have tested it before you could have used it. That is my point. And let me go to the limitation of scope. I'm nearing the end. There is a report, Chair. We're still looking for the money about the non-submission of receipt books, bank reconciliation, bank statements, monthly reconciliation, case files, charge sheets, and some answers. Chairperson, what is actually happening? Where are these things?
Thank you, Chair. The information that is referred to in the document, it is accurate that it's not there. We have not, and I will keep going back and saying that we have weaknesses in the department in terms of just information management and record keeping. That has been our biggest Achilles heel chain, and it's an area that we need to address. And in part, it goes back to the area which I had alluded to earlier, that we have lost a plot in terms of just managing the contracts that we are operating. So equally, and I do realize that you are not agreeing with this position.
No, I'm being distracted.
Oh, okay. I apologize. I just want to conclude on that point by saying, because we've allowed skills, and this is our mistake, we've allowed skills to deteriorate in areas where at receipt points where money gets received, and we have not applied ourselves in terms of managing those areas directly. That is why we are having a problem where control of documents have been a problem. And this is not just limited to the fund. I think it's an area that we had alluded to earlier when we were talking about the receipts for the leases, the financial leases. I think it's a generic weakness which we are working towards addressing. But at this stage and at the time of the audit, obviously we had not turned that corner. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, one of the root causes of the problems in the department is that they are functioning without a sufficient performance management. I was listening to them when the question about bonuses was asked, and they said, we do have the contracts, they have signed, every employee has signed them, etc. But in the notes that I have from the Auditor General under problems that they have, one of the root causes is that they do not have a sufficient performance management system. So I'm still really re-emphasizing the question that was asked. On what basis were the performance bonuses paid? If your performance management system is not sufficient, how could you pay bonuses? And if work is not done, as we had earlier on, that even when instructions are given, officials can disregard them and not do the work, how do you give them bonuses when work is not done?
On the issue of performance bonuses, and I think my colleague had started by saying that we didn't have this information. In fact, we didn't have it in our records. We collated the information. That information is now readily available in our records. On the question whether now that the integrity of that information is there, it's a different issue, Chair, if I may. But the point I think that Mr. Shabalala was trying to allude to is that those contracts are now in place. What we need to do is really going forward to look at the integrity of that information to ensure that we manage, as managers, we do manage performance. At this stage, I think that is the biggest issue where I think the member has a problem with. Thank you.
My last question.
Yeah, your last question.
Yeah, the last question, Chairperson, is about the irregularities and reported cases to the forensic unit. I know what I'm asking would be very difficult for the department to do right away, but would like to have a report on all these cases. One, how many cases? Are there any arrests made? Any convictions made? And then all the progress report in the cases that have been reported to the forensic unit. And Chairperson and I would seek your indulgence that the duration that we normally give them should be observed in presenting this matter to us. I thank you.
All right. Can we have the information? I know we have a number of things that we have requested. Can we still get that information within the same time frame, because it's information that is there. You just need to... I want us to close taking cognizance of the note you sent me. So that we close whilst we're still in a proper shape. Yes.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's unfortunate that we have to deal with some other issues as well, but maybe for other members as well, because a question was raised regarding the non-response from the DG. We accept, Chairperson, the reasons why she had to delegate some questions, but may a very disturbing phenomenon. I mean, we have observed that you have inherited a department in a mess, a department who does not even respect SCOPA resolution, a department who does not comply with the relevant regulation, a department with no performance indicators. You have condonations all over the place at will. The pointers, therefore, men, suggest that you have Justice Department who is actually breaking the law. That is a disturbing picture. I'm saying this on behalf of most of my colleagues. Who is actually in breach of law is a very serious one, in my view. Of concern, though, is that we are of the view that your management is not in a position to manage the department of this magnitude. Again, a very disturbing issue. But, Chairperson, with your indulgence, let me end there. A lot. There's a lot one wanted to say. A situation of an HR head who does not have the files of his own employees. That is unacceptable. It actually is anarchy. And we didn't have enough time to engage with yourself. Because if we had time, we were going to ask you, or I was going to ask you, what are you going to do with him? Because he can't do his job. And my favorite question.